And now a man who will do anything for the approval of strangers in a darkened room, Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you, Jim. It's 31 past the hour. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. This is the Mark Maron Show. This is sort of the pre-show. If you want to go to markmaron.com, that's MarcMaron.com, and blog with the rest of the folks posting recipes, getting angry and whatnot, go and do that. You can always call and say hello if you'd like at 877-520-1150. We are in a sort of a pre-show situation almost, but it is the real show. And like always, after a Clippers game, I'd like to try to hold on to some of those basketball fans and talk about sports. Jim, what do you got?
Well, you know, the Clippers score 55% from the floor tonight, Mark, and it was really, really impressive.
That was very good that you picked up a few of the little talking points of the fellow that was on before, the guy that doesn't say hi to us when we walk in.
Fourth
that
down,
guy.
Foul ball.
Yeah.
On the green.
That's the wrong sport, Jim. Now, why are you such a sports retarded person? What is it that happened in your life that made...
Very simple. I was beaten up a lot in high school.
By jocks?
Can we move on, Mark?
No. I want to talk about it. I haven't talked to you since you got here. You came in. You didn't say nothing to me. You talked to everybody else around, but apparently there's a little tension, a little distance. What's the story?
You were in your own little cubicle. You were fixating on what was happening in the show, and so was I. I was kind of, you know, I walked in here. All of a sudden, I heard Lori Davis got a hit out on me.
No, she doesn't have a hit out on you, Jim. She is upset. She wants to rebut what you've said.
Rebut? I want to rebut.
Yeah, there's going to be... I'm going to facilitate... I'm going to facilitate a conversation between you and Lori David because there is a misunderstanding here. I read an email from a guy saying that leaving a cell phone charger plugged into the wall without a cell phone on it, apparently, and he said it doesn't eat up any energy. And I got two or three letters from engineers saying that's a ridiculous premise to build an environmental issue platform on.
Yeah,
I didn't qualify the information. I didn't validate the information. I took it off of emails, and I went with it, and I read them as emails. And then there was a moment where you were upset, and you called her as a joke a fraud. But it was a joke. I read it as a joke.
Yeah.
And I, of course, being the diplomat in this situation, or at least a person in the middle, was saying that anything that elevates people's awareness of environmental issues in their day-to-day life is important.
Well, you know what? I agree 100% with you on that.
I don't think she is necessarily mad at you. I think she wants to set the record straight on cell phone chargers and about what she's doing. I don't think she wants to, and I think we'll have a platform for you to discuss your environmental issues. I think we're going to have that today. I think we're going to do an entirely environmentally themed show either tomorrow or the next day, whenever Lori David decides she wants to come back on and talk to us. I just think, like anybody else would, if you're sitting at home and you listen to the radio and you've just been a guest on that radio show and somebody says something about you that you find negative, you want to get back on and clear it up. So maybe she'll come back on and clear it up. Maybe she won't. But the deal is that there was just an issue in terms of how broad a platform are we talking about with anybody's environmental issues and what they're championing. I think the real issue between you and her was that she is working on one thing and you brought up another thing that needs work as well and needs that consciousness needs to be elevated about just how much the meat industry and meat consumption is destroying the environment, is aiding in contributing to greenhouse gases. Climate change is a real issue to the point where I was watching on 60 Minutes, something that actually came out over a year ago. Those memos that were edited by an ex-oil lobbyist.
Absolutely.
Who is now working for the oil industry again about the danger of greenhouse gases. I mean, these are all different issues. But not the one thing that gets me in all of this is, I hope Lori David comes back. I enjoy talking to her. I hope that you stand up for your point, which a lot of our bloggers and a lot of our emails have talked about, that it's an important issue. And they got on Lori David's case as well, saying that her scope was narrow. But nonetheless, she is doing the big work. And nonetheless, everyone can't be entirely green, although we'd all like to be. I have my own problems. I'm trying to kick aspartame. Do you understand? I'm coming off a serious aspartame bender.
I'm just saying, I'm not entirely green. I'm not saying anything about it being perfect or kicking meat entirely or all that. I'm saying that I want to raise awareness of the fact that meat production causes at least 21% of all carbon dioxide.
Today,
21%.
That's
a huge amount.
A lot. That is that's right next to industrial waste.
And it's easier for the average person to do something about that than it is, in my opinion, in any other aspect of this.
Do you know what addiction is like, though? Do you know what it's like to wake up in the morning and say, God, I need a steak. I need a steak. Do you know what that feels like to spend your entire day just saying, oh, man, if I don't eat a steak, I don't know what I'm going to do, man. I don't know what I'm going to do.
That's where crack comes in.
All right, like that doesn't cause problems? But I agree with you. Sure, if you can mix it up, mix and match, maybe spread your addictions out. So you're saying basically as long as you don't eat meat, who the hell cares what you do?
That's right.
Who cares if you add to crime? Who cares if you're buying illegal drugs on the street corner or stealing your mom's purse to get it? I never stole anyone's purse to get meat.
You don't have to steal your mom's purse as long as you point a gun at her. She'll just give it to
you. She'll just give it to you.
Yes.
That I know. But from a different situation that we can go into later. We have a clip of the situation. But first, before we go to the clip, just so everyone's clear over where everyone's standing on this, there's a lot of stuff going on today. You know, George Bush spoke today, which is always frightening. We'll get into that a little later. We're going to have a guy on the show to address my insane obsession with the cover-up, or what I feel is a cover-up of mad cow reality. I believe this. I've believed this for years. And just the fact that they are stopping, the day after the third case of mad cow is found in this country, in Alabama, from a cow from Canada. This Canada thing gets me, too. We've got to ask him about that. We've got a guy, Dr. Michael Gregory. He's an expert on mad cow disease and nutrition and meat eating and low-carb diets. He's an expert on a lot of stuff, but beef is his thing. And he's going to give us the lowdown on what he thinks. Because, you know, a lot of people don't even believe that sponge form, and how do you pronounce it? I will tell you right now that bovine sponge form encephalopathy does not even cause Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Okay? There's some people that believe that, and that is can be used and spun as saying that it is not a danger to humans. I want to get to the bottom of that with him, and I also got some questions to ask about low-carb diets, which I'm not on. But getting back to the issue at hand, also, we're going to talk to Chris Daley, who was a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He actually made a proposal. They voted on a proposal to impeach Bush up in the state legislature of San Francisco. That may not make a big difference in terms of actually facilitating an impeachment of the president, but he is an activist on a city level, and he does a lot of stuff. He does a lot of stuff for marijuana dispensary laws. He does a lot of stuff in light of the housing situation up in San Francisco. He seems to be a real progressive warrior that pisses off the right on a fairly regular basis. We're going to get him on the phone. Martin Smith from the LA Times, who's the co-author of a new book called Oops, 20 Life Lessons from the Fiascos That Shaped America. It's an interesting book. He basically has chosen a bunch of these events in the history of America that have been disasters, but yet have led to something not necessarily good, but have changed the course of history in a way that we've learned something from it. And I'd like to address the fact that George Bush defending this war that he's gotten us into, continuing to defend it and saying that the troops are going to remain there till 2008 is one of the deadliest, most destructive fiascos ever undertaken by a human being. And I think it is because that he thinks ultimately he will be forgiven by history and looked at as a great leader. I really think he's still banking on that, but I want to get into detail with that later. What I want to do now is play the exchange that we had, you and I had, the day after Lori David was here, in terms of just setting his trade. I don't know if she's listening. Yeah, part of this is my own sort of aggravation about some people hear things on radio that they hear it the way they want to hear it. When you're listening to radio, it's a very personal experience, and you hear what you think you hear, and you hear the tone you think you heard it in, and you make decisions based on that perception, an aural perception, which is a little more vague than a visual perception, which can be vague as well depending on your mental state. But can we hear what Jim and I said the day after Lori David was here? I have a problem with liberals or people who are so, you know, dead set on the idea that if you're not attacking everything, then you're not really doing anything. And a lot of those people just talk. They don't really do anything. But nonetheless, somebody sent this in response to her unplug your cell phone charger claim, which I, of course, did. And I think is not a bad idea, but after I get this. As an engineer, I found her continuous harps about unplugging chargers quite ridiculous. I have a voltmeter, and I know how to use it. I added LED lights to my camper so they would dry dock, run off only batteries, for a week. family of four. So this is a guy who's looking out saving some dough for his family. Now, a charger, when it isn't charging, is either drawing nothing in current or possibly enough to light up the tiny LED that some of them have to indicate that they're plugged in and or charging. Regardless, it's either nothing or enough to light a tiny LED light, which is virtually nothing. Far be it for me to suggest that a Hollywood producer's wife doesn't know what she's talking about when it comes to electric current usage. But sorry, that was just plain ridiculous. See, this guy might be a conservative. I can't quite tell. But nonetheless, I think it's wrong, because I think that if you raise the awareness, just getting people to think in terms of conservation, in terms of environmental awareness, even on a day-to-day level, you're doing something.
Well, then she shouldn't poo-poo the meat thing.
You're right. She shouldn't poo-poo it, but I think
that accounts for at least 21% of the greenhouse gases in the global warming, and she doesn't even take that into account.
What now? Thank you for the time travel music, Brendan. But where was the point where Jim said, she's a fraud?
You know, it was right there. It was on the clip, but it got cut off there.
The clip got cut off because of it.
I think it was censoring itself because it was offended by that.
Yeah, I know. I have a suspicion that, you know, the people down the hall at the conservative side of this station here at the Clear Channel Radio Mill, where we're just, you know, Clear Channel is just in charge of the zeitgeist's unconscious. It doesn't make political decisions, but there's a bug in the system. And unfortunately, the bugs in this system are conservative bugs, and they're working against us in the machine. That's what's happened there.
Why would they take out that part then? I would think they would want that part in there if there was a conservative bug.
It's a haphazard bug. It just knows that it's programmed to eat something every so often on our station.
There's no way I think Lori Dave is a fraud. I mean, the evidence
Mr.
is there.
Oh, Mr. Backpedal.
I'm not backpedaling. I was joking when I said that. I mean, somebody who starts the virtual march against global warming, I mean, you know, those
decent
are...
Decent person.
Yeah, those are great motivations. I have nothing...
You know, after I listen to this, I don't mean to cut you off.
And I do have a great screenplay I'd like to give her.
Yeah, I know. I knew that was what was coming, is that you have no faith in this show, so you're just sort of hedging your bets for the future, like she's ever going to even talk to you
I'd
again.
I'd like to be
calling
able to afford another pair of pants. Is that all right?
I got a check for you, by the way. You want... You're hedging your bets. What were you going to say, Jason the Jew from Wisconsin? No. I don't want to deny you your mic time because you're leaving. You're leaving. The guy that we break in, we hang out for, 2 weeks, and he's like, yeah. Hey, sorry, I got to go work for somebody else. What?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that, is it possible we have a double agent in our midst?
I don't know.
Named Gentle Giant?
Paul Asplund, the Gentle Giant.
I've always been suspicious of him.
So you're thinking that maybe he's, feeding the other side some information? Not that guy. Who's the one who's leaving? Huh? Who's the suspicious guy who's leaving to go over to KFI and work for them over there?
It's a great opportunity. I couldn't
That's
pass
right.
it up.
That's what people say, you know. That's what the people are willing to suspend their conscience and everything they believe in for a great opportunity. Well, I hope you can live with that, okay? I hope when you can live with that as your soul slowly withers and dies because you're working against everything you believe in. Or maybe another thing I realize is sometimes personal beliefs and personal integrity and things that people hold near and dear to their heart don't really have any effect on the employment decisions they make, because somehow they can compartmentalize those things and lie to themselves. So I hope you're successful with that.
Yeah, that coupled with the $11 an hour that they promised me.
Okay, well, there's another thing. Well, then hopefully that'll afford you a jump in the tax bracket you're in and thus give you a belief in conservative principles.
See?
Okay, I understand where you're headed.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I agree with it. Yeah. See, I look... We'll have her on. We'll talk about it, okay? And if she wants to come on tomorrow, if she wants to come on now, she can call. I don't know. I don't know how upset she is.
All I wanted to do was just draw attention to what most environmentalists who are meat eaters seem to just be in denial about or forget about conveniently, is that their diet is a huge factor on environmental destruction, rainforest destruction. And when I brought that up, I seemed to get a lot of hostility. I don't know if it was directed towards me or other people that have asked her about it before.
Do you want me to give you my interpretation of it?
No.
Do you want me to give you my interpretation of it?
No.
Do you want me to give you my interpretation
of it?
Okay,
let me think about this for a second.
Nah. All right. Well, look.
Go ahead.
No. I, as I said before, and this is not a big issue, I think that progressives, liberals, environmentalists, hardcore environmentalists, green anarchists, whoever, there is a complete spectrum of people that are involved in these type of issues. And all of them want to change things. All of them want to facilitate change. I just think that when you are a single issue, when you have a single issue focus, when you have an agenda that involves an action that you have to facilitate that takes up a lot of your time, like a virtual march or no fur or whatever your boutique environmental issue is, outside of the big picture. You're going to, I'm sure that everywhere she goes, she brings up, and the one thing I realized also in this email is that guy was sort of nasty. I mean, he was, you know, harping, you know, producer's wife. I mean, he was diminishing.
Yeah,
he was not a good guy. See, that's the thing about a lot of environmentalists and people who are on the same team is they both bring their stupid, sexist male baggage to the table, number one. Number two, they make judgments of people because of, you know, where they are in life.
Where's the judgment she made about me, it seems?
Well, that's what I was getting to.
You guys didn't get to hers.
Well, that's what I was getting to, is that when you have a single issue focus and you have a single agenda, she has to field questions constantly from people going, well, what about? Whereas I think what she was saying is, this is what I'm doing. Now, if her facts are wrong about the cell charger, because we looked up some facts about it, Brendan's got some facts right now, and if that turns out to be sort of a ridiculous little thing, then the criticism was viable. All right. But if that's not the issue, I think what she was doing with you was saying, look, I'm working on this. I understand that that's a problem, but it's not something I'm working on. So she was trying to buffer herself for being called to the carpet and saying, and people going, you're not a real environmentalist. You're just a rich woman who's married to a Hollywood personality. What do you know? You know, and that's how that opens up that whole can of worms. The thing that disappoints me the most is that we got so many emails from people that were so quick to hate her or to be critical of her and who claim to be on the same side. See, I've gotten this from both sides with liberals. It's sort of like, can't we all be under one umbrella? Aren't we working on the same thing? But then when somebody has a difference, they're like, hey, screw her, man. She doesn't know her facts, and that's not really the issue. It just becomes snotty, and it's just a pool of vipers, and we should be directing our energy in the same direction.
I thought a lot of them were listening constructive criticism about the way she responded, not so much as to what she was saying.
I never heard her harp. I didn't hear her harp.
I didn't hear. You know,
did you hear harping?
There were a couple of destructive. I think she rammed up my ass something. I think she was really.
Do we have to go up? Can't we just all right?
Yeah, up. I think she crawled up my ass about something that had nothing to do with what I was saying. I think something happened years ago that she was reacting to.
No,
it didn't have anything to do with what I was saying.
Make psychological assumptions about her.
I can do that.
Okay, fine.
I'm not an expert on psychology.
No, but you're doing the same thing. You're making a judgment based on something you don't know because of who she is.
It seemed abnormally harsh for what I was saying. All I wanted to do was draw attention to something that I thought she would be really, really concerned about and say, hey, yes, you're right. You know what? That is incredibly important. I'm not working on it? Well, I don't know what you mean by I'm not working on it.
Don't you listen to what I just said? I just said the whole thing. I just said the whole thing of why she responded that way, because she had a specific focus.
But her specific focus is global warming, and that's a huge part of it. I would think that she would envelop that. That's part of under the umbrella.
Okay, all right, there you go.
It should not be excluded. That's ridiculous to exclude it.
I understand. And we're going to address this with her. I wonder if she's listening.
I got a great screenplay.
Yeah, that's good. You might want to shop that somewhere else, like Mexico, somewhere outside of Hollywood where you're not insulting the...
Now who's harping and insulting her, you know, her intelligence? She's not going to be that prejudiced against somebody who has an honest disagreement and opinion.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Really?
Rick Maron Show, Progressive Talk, AM 1150. Give us a call, 877-520-1150, if you want to get into this discussion about environmental issues and the big picture.
And now back to my recently discovered biological father, Mark Maron. I love you, Dad.
Okay. All right. Thanks, buddy. 51 past, you're listening to the Mark Maron Show. I am him. I don't think I should do that. I don't think I should refer to the show as the Mark Maron Show and Mark Maron, because that's redundant and ridiculous. I should just say, welcome to the show, Mark. How are you? You know what I'm saying, Jim?
I just say, hey, I'm MM.
We're all the... Hey, yeah, it's a good idea. Like the initials, quite cute. Yeah, it's good. 520-877-520.
Man, what is that?
1150. If you want to talk about environmentalism and the big picture, you know, there are margins to everything. There's a margin to the right. There's a margin to the left. There's intolerance on the right. There's intolerance on the left, just for different reasons. But they both seem strikingly similar to me at times. I didn't get to cover this the other day. Let's lighten it up before we get into the hardcore stuff in just a few minutes, or whatever we're going to get into. Mad cow disease, local politics, Bush, environmentalism. We already talked about. We're getting into that. What do you got there? Should I get an apple?
Yeah, you definitely should.
Jim just pulled out his Apple notebook. I have this Toshiba satellite, that was infected with some sort of horrendous porn virus that killed its hard drive a while back. That people don't realize that porn kills. You know, it's one thing that sex can kill, but porn kills computers. I had to be protected. I shouldn't be. Maybe it's a lesson to me. I'm not going to defend porn necessarily, but I am a user on occasion. I find it to be a necessary thing sometimes. But they will kill computers. You have to be careful. And I hear the Apple is resilient. It's not a firewall. It's some sort of prophylactic device that protects it from porn viruses. Do you know anything about that, Jim?
Yes, very few viruses ever infect the
Macintosh. Can it be said that if a virus gets into an Apple, it's bad? Is it a bad? Would it be a bad Apple then? I couldn't. What? Come on.
Sure, MM. Hoops.
Okay. All right.
Hoops Marin.
All right, little Jimmy Earl. Jimmy Earl.
One of those viruses got in the Macintosh recently through the Safari.
Mm-hmm. And Safari's bad.
And you know, all the headlines said, "Oh, a horrible virus! Macintosh finally gets bit by virus."
Gets sick. Yeah.
But you know, it was just a tiny thing, and it's easily reversible.
Really, with some antibiotics or a little cough syrup or something. It was just a mild thing, bacterial infection, not a virus.
Pretty much.
877-520-1150. Won't somebody please call? How's that for a topic? Why don't you call me? Call me, you liberal asses. Let's do this. Come on, say hello. I know it's just are we still filtering out Clippers people? Well, here's something. Here's something for you people. My wife is addicted to the knife show on cable. You ever seen that show where they sell knives? Those two guys that sell like 20 knives. Have you ever seen that?
I love that show. Yeah.
You do? It's hilarious, but it's bizarre. And I always wondered, who the hell's buying the knives? And why are they buying them? What kind of person buys those knives? Where they literally offer you 20 knives, comes with 15 other knives and these super dragon-killing knives, all for $20. And then last week I read this story about a guy, all right, I don't want to tip it, all right, but there's an altercation. The police arrived during an altercation. There was an aggravated assault, all right, and this was in, where the hell was it? In Chicago. So the police show up, and this guy comes running out of his house naked. All right, he's fighting with his girlfriend. He comes running out of his house naked with a handful of knives. Not one knife, a handful of knives. And he starts throwing knives at the cops. Literally, naked, in front of his house, winging knives at the cops who are 20 feet, 30 feet away. Okay? And then apparently, the cops are looking around, and while he is throwing knives, and I am not lying, he threw his penis. Where'd that come from? He had cut off his own member and threw it at the cops with 20 knives, okay? And then he goes back into the house. And I got to imagine the cops are like, you got to be kidding me. He goes back into the house and gets more knives and comes out and starts throwing more knives. And they taser this guy and they bust him. But this is the guy. Where else are you going to get 40 knives to throw at cops and then cut off your own penis and throw that at the cops? What kind of strange portrait in sexual frustration and in male horrendous desperation is that? I mean, that's the kind of guy that buys the knives. A guy sitting at home going, that would make me feel big and strong. I have a lot of knives. They're literally phallic replacements. And he's having an argument with his wife. It was his girlfriend. Or he's probably over some sort of sexual issue. And this is the kind of person that takes that show seriously and actually goes for the whole package.
Flavor, play!
Oh, there you go. There you go. Hey, let's talk to somebody. Oh, well, this should help. What's up, Danny?
Yep.
What do you got?
First I want to say that I love your show, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say that my mother worships the ground that you walk on.
That's very nice.
She tries. But what I wanted to say, and I wanted to speak as myself, I'm a campaign manager for Democratic candidates.
Okay.
And I wanted to say that environmental issues have never really gotten me going. Often they seem to revolve around issues of open space. But the environmental issues that do interest me have to do with environmental racism and things of that nature, or even smaller practical things. So if Lori David's talking about cell phone chargers, it might not seem like the most important thing in the world, but at least it's practical and tangible, and it's something that you can get your head around. And it's also something that applies to everybody equally, as opposed to this fight for open space, which in the long run seems to be a lot more about rich people going camping than anything else.
That's interesting. So, Danny, before I let you go, we got to get going here. Do we have a shot at taking back the Senate? Do we have a shot?
Well,
quickly, yes or no would be good.
I would say yes, absolutely, more than a shot.
Great.
I think it's going to happen.
Oh, excellent. Thanks, Danny. Thanks for calling. So, look, we have got the show proper starting in a minute. We're going to have Dr. Greger on here to talk about Mad Cow and the threat of Mad Cow. And
more coffee, Mr.
Stay with us.
Yes, please.
Live from Burbank, California, a wonderland of shops and restaurants, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he hates our freedoms. Mark Maron!
Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, extreme environmentalists, scaling buildings with hemp rope and hemp loincloths, taking down billboards, throwing paint balloons. How are you? Look, you know, we've been talking about this Lori David issue. If you're just tuning in, we had a little pre-show action going on here after the post-show Clippers thing. This is very interesting to be on with the long extended version. Lori David wants to come back on to revisit what she feels like there's a problem. I'm thinking primarily between her and Jim. And, you know, I was talking to Jim on the break, and you're right. All right. She did say some stuff that was weirdly out of place, a little defensive, and misjudged you. And I think we just have to settle it. Let's just take this one call who it seems like a pro-Jim call. Chris in Toronto. How are you, Chris?
Hello.
What's going on, man? Are you keeping up with this whole thing on this show here?
Yeah. I don't want to just say that, you know, Jim's right, Lori's wrong. I'd say that they both have valid points. I mean, she wants to use her airtime to talk about what she wants to talk about, and then Jim wants to make a valid point, and she kind of, you know, moves his stuff aside. They both have a, you know, valid comment. But what I want to say is that welcome back, first of all.
Thanks.
But listening to the show the first couple of weeks, I mean, I know Jim from the previous show, he's a super talented guy and funny guy. But listening to the first few days of the show, Jim's not speaking up too much, and I'm thinking, does Jim not want to be there? Like, what's the deal? But just to actually hear Jim speak up on the environmental issues that he cares about, it's cool because, you know, it's something that he's actually passionate about. So, I mean, I know you're able to get humor out of the horrendous stuff going on with the Bush administration. So
sure.
If you can get some kind of a regular environmental bit that focuses on some of the, you know, different issues that'd be great.
We're definitely doing that. And the answer is no, Jim does not want to be here at all. Matter of fact, he barely likes me. He's disliked me forever. We were just in a weird situation and we came together. Is that about right, Jim?
Absolutely not. Mr. Maron, everything is fine, Mr. Maron.
The weird tension.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Okay, bye.
I think Chris is totally off base. I do not know what he is talking about.
Okay, again, I have your check out in the backpack.
Hey, thanks.
So, all right, well, we're going to try and get, we're going to continue. Here's what's going on. We're waiting for Dr. Michael Greger to call us. He's a bovine spongiform encephalitis expert.
My God, he's been infected.
No, I hope not. I hope I haven't been infected. When was the last time you ate meat? Be honest with me.
In 1984.
Okay, so you're not out of the tunnel yet, my friend.
That's right.
Apparently, that mad cow in human beings, the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, could be in rumination for 40, 50 years or something.
Or you could get a Yakov-Smirnoff disease,
which is horrible because it doesn't sell anymore.
Right.
Russia's a tough country. No baseball. Yeah, they got everything there. Apparently, Yakov Smirnoff, to shift gears, owns a casino or a club somewhere, I think, in Branson.
Branson, yeah, I know.
Have you been there? Did you perform there back in the days when you were in vaudeville with Lank?
I used to sell tickets to the Laugh Stop in Claremont, and he'd come there all the time and do his act.
Back in the day before the Cold War ended?
In 1980.
When he was funny and no one knew he had a wig. Anyways, moving on. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush held his second news conference of the year with reporters today, expressing optimism about the war in Iraq. In fact, the president felt so optimistic, he even said he was going to try to sell his Social Security plan to the Iraqis. Rumors are flying that Thomas Kane Jr., a Republican running for U.S. Senate, didn't arrive promptly to his fundraiser in New Jersey last night so he could avoid being photographed with Vice President Dick Cheney. Kane said the snub was not deliberate. However, after lengthy questioning and some cocoa, Kane pointed to the crotch of a Raggedy Andy doll and said, "That's where he touched me. Are you happy now?" You like that one? Oh, you like that one? Yeah, I know. A new study shows the elderly women who watch shows that elderly women who watch daytime TV talk shows and soap operas score poorly on tests of memory. Researchers attributed the poor memory to brain trauma because most of the women end up slapping their foreheads saying, "Why am I watching this crap?" Slapping their foreheads over and over. Yeah. Why am I watching this crap? Why am I saying this crap? That's the Mark Maron Short Order News for today.
You know, this the Short Order News is hilarious to most people.
Okay, okay, that's great, man. Thanks. You know where I was? We had a long weekend, Jim. You want to share with the people? And can I just reach out to somebody who's on the blog and driving a truck at the same time? Sean, relax. Oh, my God, this guy, I think he's all hopped up on the trucker speed. You okay, buddy? Here's a couple of things I want to tell you. Last night, we did not have a long notice as to when as to the fact that we weren't going to be on number one. If you have problems blogging this show or getting your podcast, write to Air America. They're still the ones in charge of this parade. Do you understand? They are the ones in charge of whatever the hell is going on that end. I believe me, my frustrations, I can't even share them with you because I got a new audience here that needs to be sucked into my little hole of anger and pity and whatever over the situation that I'm in with those people. But you got to write them. The other thing is we're trying to keep you up to speed with what's going on here on the show. All right, Jim? Now, tell me what you did over the weekend, because you had a long weekend. I'm assuming that you did something very proactive for the environment. Did you?
Well, yeah. I kind of stayed in my pajamas and didn't leave my bed all weekend.
Oh, that's good. That
saved a lot of energy.
Save a lot of energy. You probably didn't eat much bad stuff.
No, I didn't eat anything.
You didn't do anything? What the hell's wrong? Are you depressed? Yeah, what the hell's going on?
Heather left for Phoenix.
Your woman left you?
No.
For a city?
For the weekend. She was there in Phoenix with you.
I was in Phoenix, that's right, for 2 days. I didn't see Heather. I didn't see her. I swear to God I didn't see her at that hotel over by Tempe. I didn't see her. I didn't run into her.
It's a big town.
I know, and I didn't see her. Don't look at me like that. I didn't do nothing.
So that's what I did. I unpacked some stuff. That's about it. It's not very exciting. I went down to Echo Park and looked at the swans and the ducks, and I thought, you know, if the bird flu comes down, which is supposed to, then I won't be able to walk in Echo Park anymore.
Oh, I think I have and
the
bird
I,
flu.
Then I bought some face mask.
I think I got a little of the bird flu. I was in the suburbs, Jim, and I was happy to hear you had face masks, and you can now, you know, be part of the army of Asian women that wear those things regularly. I don't understand what that's about, but they seem to be ahead of the game on certain things, and I'm not characterizing them as a collective they in a racist sense. I'm just saying that I see more Asians with the paper surgical masks than I do any other nationality of person. I was in Phoenix. I went to visit my brother and reintroduce myself to my three nieces and nephews. I have two nieces and one nephew. And I have to be honest, I feel horrible, horrible for people that have to live in these exurbs and have such limited choices in terms of where to eat. And then if you have kids, even then it even becomes more limited. And you have to have an SUV in order to have children, apparently. I was driving around a giant Chevy Tahoe. Don't they make the Tahoe? That thing is huge. It's my brother's big gas-guzzling SUV that he trucks his kids around in. So I'm driving around with three kids, which is a whole new experience to me. And I got to get some of these kids. I have to get them because you know what's great about kids? They get you out of you. You know what, Jim? I spend a lot of time in the old Markhead. But when you have kids, you're like, hey, don't drown. I need to watch that kid. I took the kid swimming. That is horrifying. I had no idea. My nephew is like four, and the girls are old enough to swim well. But this kid, they throw him in the pool. My mother goes up to she's staying at a hotel because we can't all be together. That would be a disaster. She's at a hotel, so the kids are swimming in the hotel pool. They're all in the pool. And this little four-year-old kid, he swims well, but it's just that doggy paddle thing. And, like, I'm standing by the side of the pool going, he's not going to make it. He's going to drown. And you realize how quickly that can happen and just how horrifying that would be. I take it back. I can't have kids. There's no way I can be that responsible. Can you imagine that? Oh, but I love them. We had a great time. But here's what I'm getting at with this limited choices thing. I went to the Macaroni Grill, which is a Chili-owned faux fancy Italian place. Mm. And I don't know what happens in these restaurants. If somebody can explain it to me, I wish they would. With these bread machines, they made this focaccia that looked fine. It looked exciting. It was hot. It obviously had been freshly made, but I could not digest any of this stuff. I don't know if it's processed weird, if it's made out of fake stuff. I don't know what it is, but I was sitting in this chain restaurant with these people that were excited to be there. Everybody was eating the same thing, and I felt like I was surrounded by strange zombie people that didn't realize that there were better things out there, and they no longer had a personality of their own to make decisions. I may be projecting onto them, but I swear to God, I ate a meal there, and it took me 2 days to recover from it because my body felt so polluted with crap. Do you have something to say on that, Jason, the Jew from Wisconsin?
No, you took the words out of my mouth. I coming from Wisconsin,
yeah,
you know, I know that world.
There's nowhere else to go.
Right, there's one place in town. It's, you know, somewhat acceptable. You know, it's maybe, but it's upscale to them, and they look forward to going. And yeah, unless you, but if you spend any time in L.A. or New York or whatever, then.
But
it's really foreign to you. But
I'm not even being a snob. I mean,
it's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, I live a humble life up on a hill in an old neighborhood that isn't really what I would call a suburb. I've lived in New Mexico. I've lived a lot of places. I go out of my way to seek food sources that at least have some authenticity, because I think once you remove the love from the process, or at least halfway good ingredients, something goes wrong. You're eating like pablum, like robot food. You're eating something that is polluted with a lack of caring. And I am overreacting a bit, but I'm not being a snob in any way. I just feel bad that there are such limited options, and all these people they shop at Sam's Club or Walmart or Costco, you would hope, because I think that's the good one. But just buying in that much bulk, there's got to be some sort of compromise integrity of the product you're buying. It's horrendous, and it's really meaningless. But the one thing I did learn about kids is that the reason that I If there is anything, the reason that I get worked up and angry about issues is really because I just don't want bad guys to win. I don't like anybody, you know, telling me what to do, really, but I don't like bad guys to win. I certainly don't like being lied to by authority, and I don't like authority in general anyway. So I'm really about, you know, justice and fairness. That's what I want.
I've always known that about you.
Yeah. But if you have kids... If you have kids, your commitment should be entirely different. That's why I don't understand why so much of middle America is on the fence politically. If you have kids, all you should be thinking about is what the hell kind of world are these kids living in? I mean, that's what I started thinking about. My brother is not necessarily a politically active guy. But you know what happens is you're too busy, you know, driving the kids to the macaroni grill and trying to figure out what they're going to eat for breakfast and how you're going to get three of them to school, to realize that the people in charge of this damn country are running it into the ground to the point where there is going to be so much debt, so much environmental catastrophe by the time these kids grow up, that they're not even going to have a decent world to live in.
That's what the people in charge count on, that people don't have enough energy or time to think about these things.
Well, they don't, but the thing I don't understand is why can't we plant the seeds of dissent in their head enough just to say, I'm just not going to vote that way. But then you run into the issue of, like, which side is, you know, obviously right now the Republicans are the worst that they've ever been ever, and now you got to figure out what the Democrats stand for. Man. Challenging. I got to get some kids, though. Do you have any?
I can't talk about that on the
air. All right. We'll be back in a second. 20 past, Mark Maron Show.
And now, he invented the internet, Mark Maron.
Thank you. Thank you. I did invent it. I just wish I knew how to use it better. I don't know where the hell people get all the time to blog and do what they need to do. I don't manage time right, or perhaps I have not adapted properly to the pace of the world right now. There are so many bands I don't know about. There are so many blogs I don't know about that I can barely even get my own blog going, let alone manage my website. And I feel like my days are full. Maybe that's because I enjoy leisure time, Jim.
So
I like to just sit and noodle around, maybe roll something around in my head for a little while, you know, take it out for a drive. Now all of a sudden I sound like Big Eddie. Take it out for a drive, maybe. I don't know what it is, but I don't manage my time properly. You know what? Your little thing with Lori David,
yeah.
One of our listeners posted something on Daily Kos.
I'm just looking at that now.
That's mind-blowing. I'm so glad that he did that, though, that someone basically explained what went on between Jim and Lori David. This is a blogger.
Because I don't know what went on.
You do know. We've established what went on, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. We've got the corrected version of what happened the day after. This is what Lori David reacted to in terms of environmentalism. And I know we're boring a Democratic campaign strategist right now. But that was interesting to me, too. That guy calls. He says he works on campaigns for Democratic candidates, and he says that most environmental issues can be boring. And then he said that except for racism in the environment, which isn't really an environmental issue, it's a way of talking about racism. And then he said most environmental issues revolve around big space. But really, the key issue, if I'm not mistaken, after watching 60 Minutes and after talking about this, is that we could be in real trouble if these polar ice caps melt away and the temperature continues to rise. Because that fella whose name eludes me right now, the guy at NASA, the scientist who has been edited by this administration, claims that within 10 years, we are going to cross a point, a threshold, where there'll be no stopping it. And I just see this as another example of just not just incompetence, but, you know, pathological political selfishness to the point where these guys just don't give a crap. They just don't care. That they all they can do is think in the short term in terms of the damage they're doing, yet in the long term in terms of maintaining power. Well, how long do they think they're going to fool people? The guy's name, the scientist at NASA, is James Hansen, and he's an outspoken person, and he put it very plainly. He said that once you cross this threshold, you can't all of a sudden refreeze the polar ice caps.
You know, I'd go one step further and say it's pathological denial on the part of
everybody else,
average people, because scientists established the global warming, you know, proved this pretty much in like 30, 40 years ago.
But
you know? And it came out then, and they said it was happening, it will happen.
There are certain things that people don't want to think about because they're so frightened. I agree. That is the definition of denial. It's the same thing with this mad cow thing.
You know, Winston Churchill said about America that America does all the wrong things first before it does the right thing. Well, right this time, it's too late to wait for America to do the right thing, because by the time they get to doing the right thing, it might be too late with the environment and global warming.
That's interesting. That's what this guest that we're going to have later in the show, it's a little more trivial than that, but this whole book, this Oops, 20 Life Lessons from Fiascos That Shaped America. But, I mean, the fiasco that this could cause is that we're going to have to evolve something. We're going to need a new appendage. We're going to have to re-evolve gills. We're going to, I don't know what the hell we're expected to do, but Brian from Everett is on the phone right now. I think we should take it. Does he have another song? All right. Well, we'll take it in a minute. We'll talk about that. And I also want to talk about George Bush's press conference. I like to talk about some trivial stuff too. Not that I haven't been doing that already, but the charges have been dropped against Deborah Lefebvre, who is that teacher who is charged of having sex with a 14-year-old middle school student. She's and I've said this before, just a tremendous teacher, apparently. I don't know. I've gotten in arguments with people about this before. I know the kid was abused, and apparently the reason that they're dropping these charges against her is that the kid has performance anxiety about testifying. Yeah, I don't think he had it before, clearly, but now he doesn't want to testify against her. He's nervous about it, and it's causing him psychological distress, so they dropped the charges. But I still, even when I look at that teacher, I think good, bad things. 29 past the hour, you're listening to the Mark Maron Show. It's Progressive Talk, AM 1150.
And now all the power of Rome cannot stop him. Mark Maron.
Okay. 33 past the hour. Progressive Talk, AM 1150. We got Brian from Everett on the phone. We should talk to him in a second. I think he'll sing to us. But I got a question here from the blog, markmaron.com, MercMaron. Jason, the Jew from Wisconsin. Did you ever get the bluegill fry at the Haysack? Did you ever get the bluegill fry at the Haysack?
I didn't mean to make it sound like I was a country bumpkin.
What does that mean?
I mean, I lived in a city.
But I mean, what's the Haysack? Is it a good place?
I have no idea what the Haysack is.
Oh, see, you're letting down Jerogo. Jerogo, who's a big Jim Earl fan, is going to be upset with you. Apparently, it's a cool place. That's what I'm thinking. Or maybe I'm outside of the joke.
I'm not saying I wouldn't go there.
What isn't a bluegill? Is that a fish? Wisconsin lake fish? They have lakes in Wisconsin, don't they? I'm not good on geography.
Yeah,
Can you get fish up there?
Well, they have lakes and rivers. And
bluegill fry at the Haystack sounds pretty good to me.
Friday night fish fry, very common.
Right, so it sounds authentic and pretty exciting to me. Bovine spongiform encephalopathy. Thank you, old Zeb, for the enunciation way to say that. Bovine spongiform encephalopathy. Well, apparently, the guest that we booked to talk about bovine spongiform encephalopathy has been stifled by the USDA beef stooges. I don't know what happened. We had a cell phone number on him. He was going to call us from a land phone. Now that we can't even get a noise to come out of the thing when you dial the number. I think the meat stooges got to him. They're trying to keep this thing under wraps because half of us have got prions plowing through our brains right now. Turn it into mush. That's what's going to happen. And you're just going to be sitting there, and your grandkid is going to be going, how come Grandpa doesn't know my name anymore? Why? And your daughter's going to say, because he's senile. And that's not going to be it. It's going to be because of that damn burger you ate, and these bastards are covering it up. And now they've gotten to Dr. Michael Greger. They knew that he was going to be on the show. It's one thing they stick a conservative bug into the computer. Now Rove is controlling the weather out here. That's why it's been so cold in L.A., because Rove is on the top of the White House with a Reichian cloud buster, making hurricanes, clearing the slate, getting rid of the poor people, hoping they turn back into fish. All right? Maybe be served up at the Haystack in Wisconsin. I don't know. But I'm telling you, They silenced Dr. Michael Greger, but they haven't silenced Brian from Everett. Brian, honey, how are you?
Who can sing at a time like this? You know, they're building a spaceport in the United Arab Emirates, man. Did you see that?
I heard a spaceport.
I got a computer image in the paper of a spaceport in the UAE.
Is that for Michael Jackson to leave?
I don't know, man. I think they're going to be bringing in uranium from the actual planet Uranus.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, man. And then there's condiment-sniffing robots in San Diego, and my mom's an FBI agent and all that stuff.
Whoa, back up. So
wait a second, man, because it was the Huskies. That's my alma mater, man. And they were playing on Thursday down in San Diego, and then there was a bomb scare, right?
Yeah.
See, this is beyond coincidence, because I've worked in arenas, like for the food service, right?
Okay.
And so there's so somehow this ties in with me.
Right.
Obviously, because
everything does, Brian.
Because I got no friends.
I understand.
But it's like it turns out they bring in this condiment sniffing robot or something.
Robot.
Well, because it's an unattended box. They think it's a bomb scare, but it turns out to be condiment.
Your mom has an unattended box?
Well, you know, that's not my responsibility. But listen, it's like, as it turns out, it's like as it turns out, man, listen, it's like, so they find out, well, it's only condiments after all, but the FBI agent on the news, her name was my mom's name.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't your mom.
But I'm trying to write a song here, and I've been thinking of going back to my roots, kind of the country acoustic stuff, and I have some ideas, but I'm just so frustrated, and so it's such a brain-crunching episode time, they're not going anywhere, you know, but I mean.
But you got a song? You're going back to your country roots, back to could the song be set at a bluegill fry at the Haystack?
At the bluegill fry at the Haystack.
See,
I
can.
Learn to love your. I can't say that.
Yeah, okay, man.
But,
all right.
I have some more ideas for songs, but I just have writer's block in finishing them.
I think the next song should be Well, do you have something for us now, or you called to tell us that you're making progress?
You know, it's like,
do you have a fragment?
Don't come home a-drinking. Yeah, you've heard this one, with loving on your mind. You know, you've heard that before, haven't
That's
you?
Not your song.
I know, but I wrote some like that.
Well, did you call to play the song, or just to tell us that you're busy doing the song?
Well, listen, man, I don't know. This is just such a okay, here.
You sound like you're well-medicated.
I was born again, abortion. But see, it's not going anywhere. See, I've got the idea.
Why don't you work on this one? How about a song?
Here's one.
All right.
Don't do your Pilates when you're making love to me. I like that one.
I think that has some that has possibilities.
Yeah.
You're
beautiful when the moon shines on your ear hair.
Your ear hair? I think you had to write one about your mom's unattended box.
Well, she's, you know, she's the investigator. FBI stands for find Brian innocent anyway, you know. So anyway, but that's all I got. I had more issues to talk about. I had beefs. I had all this stuff. I'm going to be a hungry comedian, man. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out there and lay down the tarp in the comedy theater and let it go for 5 minutes. What do you think? Should I do it? Do I need to?
It'd be a unique approach. In all my years as a comic, I never saw anyone lay down a tarp in the comedy theater. I think you've got a unique angle there. I'm sending you two CDs. I know you were looking. Did you find it? Or?
I haven't got them yet, but when they're here, I'll give you more inspiration. I'll sing a real song.
Okay,
I'll really form a real song for you, and I'll love you and keep it up. And the best way to solve global warming is to get people to sit down and do nothing.
That's a pretty good point. That's interesting, isn't it, Jim?
People do too much.
Okay, Brian, take care of yourself. Be careful.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. See that? See, even Brian, everyone just sat down.
Did nothing.
Did you see The Sopranos the other night? Man,
yes,
we've got to talk about something important, don't we? Did you see it, though?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Wow, was that a trip or what? What the hell's going on there? It's not a dream, man. I think he's really in purgatory. I don't think he's going to pull through this. I think he's going down, dude. That wasn't a dream.
What about Lost? Did you watch Lost?
I don't get it. I'm busy reading things.
What do you mean you're busy reading? You're not too busy to watch Sopranos, you know?
Sopranos is important.
Yeah, but Lost. What about Lost?
What the hell is Lost?
Lost is like they're stuck on this island.
What?
And they can't get off, and everybody has some they have something they did in their past, and it comes, they go a lot of, you know,
So this is like a dark version of Gilligan's Island?
You know, and I think there's some religious thing behind it. That's the thing, and we finally find out what the...
What kind of religious thing? The Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade
invading?
That,
you know, there was this weird
Hollywood
dark cloud that came out and kind of
Scientology?
Talked to people, and it you know... I think it's some religious thing that's going
on. Something's going on because I'm telling you, everything that came out of everybody's mouth on TV was written by a Jew. That's the way it was for years, okay? That was what dictated the way, the rhythms of comedy, the rhythms of movies. That's why everybody was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's why everybody had the same style joke. Everything,
da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Every joke that came out of anyone's mouth on television came out of a Jew's head. Now things are changing. Tell me I'm wrong. Am I wrong? I'm not wrong. Now things are changing, my friend. Regular people are getting in there, not just Jews. The regular folk are getting in.
That's wrong.
No, it's not. It's just interesting. That's why TV is changing. That's why you have American Idol, where people with no talent are able to garner ratings because they turn their back on the Jews and the people that wrote comedy for so many years. I'm not saying all comedy writers are Jews. You know, this point's not going anywhere. It's just American Idol is nothing great and Lost is stupid. And the only good thing on TV is Sopranos and maybe one or two other things.
But you don't watch Lost.
Who cares? You just told me
about
it.
You don't even watch Flava Flav, Flavor of Love.
Nah, I don't want to watch it. I can barely sit still long enough to watch a movie at home, let alone a television show that I don't care about. Sometimes I get sucking into the CSI things because there's something compelling about guts.
Because what your friend of yours writes for, that's why.
Nah, I don't know that guy anything. He's a friend of mine, but I'm not going to watch a show that just because he writes it. I'll watch any of those gut shows because there's something that makes me all queasy and uncomfortable when I watch them rip that rib cage up and we get to look inside and they solve things. Hey, man, let me tell you, power to you if you can take a guy's fingernail and figure out, you know, who killed him. You know what I mean? That's tremendous. And I don't even know if people really do that. That's the weird thing. They could just say things. It's like, you know, get the laser-fied electrogram. And you'll be like, oh, God, look at that machine. And it doesn't even exist. They made it up to check out some guy's finger to see when he was killed. It's crap.
I bet, half the cities don't even have that kind of, you know, equipment. It's just one place that has that equipment. Everybody sends all their toenail clippings to this one place, and it gets all jumbled up.
It gets jumbled. That's why people end up in jail for something they didn't do. I didn't rape her. It wasn't my toenail. You hear that all the time in prison. I've been bamboozled. I've been set up. Check the toenail again. Damn it. Is there no justice?
You don't like watching stuff. You know, I'm going to strap you down in a barber chair.
Huh?
And make you watch a 5-minute set of me at the Holy City Zoo 20 years ago.
When did I become an old Jew? When did that happen? You know what I do now? You know what I do when my wife talks to me, even if I hear what she says? I go, what?
Oh, I thought you
What the hell is that?
I've heard you, I know what you do when your wife talks. So you go, in your head, you go.
No, like say something.
Well, Mark, you need to listen to me more for one thing, and then you got to.
Huh?
What happened to the?
I need to listen to you. Like it ends with a question. Yeah. Huh? What? I need to listen, and then I repeat what she said. So I act like I didn't hear it, then I repeat what she said. It's ridiculous. Why am I doing that?
Because you're getting old.
Oh, shut up.
But you know what? You're the youngest old guy. You're how old are you anyway?
Oh.
You're like, what are you, 40?
Are you going to start this? Are you going to start this just because you have your hair doesn't get gray because you have some freakish Nordic background?
Hey,
you're some Swede hippie that doesn't get gray hair?
I am part Jewish.
Huh?
I have 1/32nd Jewish.
Yeah, so did Hitler. What the hell difference does that make?
Well, you know, he did not celebrate his Jewishness like I did.
You celebrate your Jewishness?
I certainly do.
By what? Being in a comedy team with a Jew for 15 years?
Yes. And I have self-hatred for 1/32nd of me.
God, if it wasn't for self-hatred, I'd be a happy man, and I wouldn't have a career in show business. So, look, let's get to this because Eddie is here, and I think it's important. I was really busy today, so I am actually kind of in the dark about what's going on around town. But luckily, our investigative reporter, Eddie Pepitone, on the beat here in Los Angeles, he's here now to give us all the angles that we've come to expect from his crack reporting. Eddie, please, what went on in California today?
Well, Mark, thanks. You know, California is going to have to desegregate their double cells after the U.S. Supreme Court ruling. That's right. Right now, all of the prisons in California have two of the same race in each cell, like Noah's Ark. Uh-huh. Now, the Hispanics, blacks, and whites are going to have to coexist. This brings up the possibility of race riots, as the unwritten code of prison gangs is to never hang with anyone of another race.
Right.
Now, let me tell you something,
all
Mark.
Right, all right.
My shrink says we make our own prisons. Now, I am imprisoned by my demons,
yeah.
And I don't separate the demons in my head from each other. They're all in the same cell. Me.
All right.
That's right. You think I'm worried about the demons in my head not getting along and creating a riot, an unlivable situation? It's already unlivable.
Yeah.
All the demons in my head play together.
Yeah.
They have double and triple cells.
Okay.
And I'm the prisoner and the warden.
Yeah.
There is no rec room.
Okay, all right.
No, scratch that. There's a huge rec room for the demons to play in, and that's my life.
Okay.
I
tried
Prozac, power walking, sex games with my wife. Nothing gets me out of this hell.
My
Ralph's.
God.
Ralph sells a Boston cream pie that alleviates
all right.
it for, about 30 seconds.
Okay, all right, okay.
So I say let the California prison
all right.
system integrate.
All right, Eddie, please.
Get Boston cream pie.
All right, now get him out of here, please.
Why
can we, why have we,
again?
Why
this
it,
is great.
Why does it
you
have
know,
to go
I
like
love
this?
This kind of
why does it ever, every week, it starts out, we've got a story, and then we end up in this. What? All right, look. Let him cool off for a little while, and maybe we'll get the rest of the story once Eddie's composed himself. Thank you, Brendan, for taking him out. That was investigative reporter Eddie Pepitone with coverage of the desegregating the cells. Is that what? Every week with this, and I talked to that guy earlier in the week to see if he's up for it. And he's completely, he's like, no problem.
I don't know. I don't know why we just fall for it each time. It's inexcusable on our part.
It is inexcusable that we fall for it every week.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird that every week he comes in and does the exact same thing and we fall for it?
I do not understand that.
But it is funny that we fall for it, and it's funny that he does it in that way. And I think that if he came in and gave a straight broadcast, it wouldn't be funny, would it, Jim?
I cannot answer a question
like
that.
This is a silly show. Aren't we supposed to be talking about the issues? Aren't we fighting for our lives, Jim?
I know I am.
Where the hell? Wait, now, what's your name again, buddy?
Chris.
Chris is going to be the new board guy? Okay. So you feeling like you're getting the hang of this? All right. He understands it. He looks pretty cool, doesn't he, Chris?
I've already told him he's not allowed to talk.
Oh, he's not allowed to talk? You jumped right on when I gave you the opportunity. It didn't take you too long to start talking, did it? A genius, but you never had a bluegill fry at the haystack. How can you be a genius and not have a bluegill fry at the haystack? Do we? Is it time? Look, folks, I promise you, we are going to cover some important stuff. The Democrats are going to win the Senate back. But the Bush is an idiot, and he says the troops are going to be in Iraq till 2008. We'll play some of that. You can get insurance in Iraq for terrorism. I thought that was kind of interesting. And also, of course, we're going to have. All right, all of that, 50 past.
And now he's a condiment-sniffing robot, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. 53 past the hour. Oh, boy. All right, so Eddie is on the phone. He's cooled off. All right, let's go back to our reporter, Eddie Pepitone, on the story about desegregating prison cells. Eddie?
You want to desegregate something more? Desegregate evil, okay? The evil that exists in me. Why don't we desegregate that?
Okay.
I'll tell you why we don't desegregate that, because it can't be done.
All right, thank you, Eddie.
That's why, Mom.
Okay, take
don't
care.
All right, all right.
Bye. Okay, bye. Bye. Wow. All right, a never-ending river of bile from our reporter, Eddie Pepitone. Folks, I apologize that Dr. Greger did not show up. We will try to get him another time. We will have Martin Smith from the L.A. Times, co-author of the new book, Oops, 20 Life Lessons from the Fiascos That Shaped America. I wonder how the hell this administration is going to misshape America. I can't even imagine. Dude, I cannot even imagine the economic hole that this country is going to have to crawl out of, you know, come 2008. The entire economy is going to crumble and collapse, and these bastards will have made a fortune. They're still going to make a fortune. Bush says he's going to leave troops there till 2008. He literally said he's going to leave them there until some other president takes them out. What the hell does that even mean? What is he banking on? I want to get into talking to that a little more in depth. We're going to have blogger Chris Daly, who is a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He's going to talk to us about local governments getting involved on a national level, plus the Dick of the Day, the weekly remembrance, of course, and short order news is coming up. Tomorrow we're going to talk to the Lawton Smalls. People enjoy the Lawton. Everything's starting to sync up. Everything's starting to work out, Jim.
Lawton.
I'll tell you, the show's leveling off. Last night, no show. Tonight, 9-hour show. You see how that makes up for itself? Like tomorrow, regular show. Next night, who knows? Friday, 3-day show. We're going to do a show that starts Friday, and it's going to go all the way till Sunday. You up for that?
You know, I do a show alone at home.
The sad show?
This is called the Jim Earl Sad Show, yes.
Jim Earl Sad Show, yeah. In his pajamas, sitting at home in his pajamas?
Yeah,
I'm not going to take that call. I'm not going to take it. I don't care.
Don't take that call.
I'm not going to take that call. Let's get into something, Jim. Let's get into something real on our marathon show. I personally believe, and I hope. I was thinking about this in terms of Democrats and Republicans. I'm a little pissed off with Democrats. I'm definitely pissed off and fed up with all Republicans. But that's a given. If I'm talking on this microphone in this studio on this network, that's a given. But Democrats as well. I really believe. That we are on this situation where all we can do is say, well, I hope those guys win because they seem better.
It's what Ralph Nader has been telling us since the very beginning.
I know you love Ralph Nader. I think that Ralph Nader has a lot of good things to say, and he's a lot of great ideas. Makes me a little uncomfortable as a person.
Well, yeah.
I don't know why.
He is creepy.
He's a little creepy. And I think he might be an interesting president. You know the difference between regular people and people who are doing things for entertainment reasons or selling? I was talking about this with Brendan the other night in terms of what the difference is between an entertaining news show and just a news show. Is that, do you watch McNeil Lehrer?
Yes.
You do regularly?
Well, it's not McNeil Lehrer anymore.
McNeil Report, what is it called?
It's the NewsHour
with Jim Lehrer.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, well, you know, it's not wrong for me to call it what it used to be called just because one of the guys isn't there anymore.
No, I miss that other guy.
Yeah, NewsHour with Jim Ware. That's what...
Huntley and Brinkley I used to watch.
But that is what objective news reporting looks like. How engaging is that? I mean, it's interesting to listen, and the facts are good, but man, I'll tell you, they could, you know, zip it up, pop it up a little bit, but then it wouldn't be McNeil Era, would it? It'd be, or the McNeil Report. It would be something different. Do you know what I'm trying to say, Jim?
It'd be the McNeil O'Reilly Report.
What I'm saying is most people are full of crap. Even if they're on a microphone. That's what I'm saying. All right, 58 past the hour. Stay with us.
And now he still thinks victory in Iraq is kind of possible. Mark Maron!
What? Why'd you even say that?
I don't know. That was bad information.
How are you, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, radical environmentalists? What's going on? This is the Mark Maron Show. It is 6 past the hour. You are listening to AM 1150 Progressive Talk. If you want to blog, I say my L's improperly. For a radio personality, I have a horrendous speech impediment with L's. I have a rolling L. I don't use my tongue to say my L, and it comes out more like a W. So why don't you fester on that for a little while? Noodle on that on the blog. La, blah. This is a weird, screwed up W, L thing I've got going. But if you want a blog, I said it right that time, markmaron.com, MarcMaron.com. If you want to call and contribute somehow, 877-520-1150. I know it's a little vague. Perhaps later in the show we'll have a definitive thing for you to call about. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush held his second news conference of the year with reporters today, expressing optimism about the Iraq war. Bush said that while the initial release is not doing great, he's sure the news conference will find a large cult following once it's out on DVD. Rumors are flying that Thomas Kane Jr., a Republican running for U.S. Senate, didn't arrive promptly to his own fundraiser in New Jersey last night so he could avoid being photographed with Vice President Dick Cheney. To be fair, Secret Service agents cautioned Kane against being seen with Cheney for fear he might get shot in the face. A new study shows that elderly women who watch daytime TV talk shows and soap operas score poorly on tests of memory. When 100 of the women were polled as to what daytime talk shows they preferred the most, they said their favorites were those five women, that gay woman, and the black woman. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. That's funny. I like that one. That joke is funny. Hey, people, we shake our heads every day at these stupid decisions that dictate policy, both large and small. Our guest has taken the opportunity to chronicle some of the dumbest and at the same time most important blunders in our nation's history. Martin Smith is a senior editor at West, the magazine of the LA Times, and is the author of such books as Straw Men. He's now the co-author of Oops, 20 Life Lessons from the Fiascos That Shaped America. Thanks for being here, Martin. Nice to meet you. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
So this book is funny. It's interesting. It's an odd angle. But I'll tell you, I was thinking about it in the news today when you have a president that's supporting one of the biggest fiascos to ever be executed. He has hopes that one day history will be kind to him. But a lot of these fiascos you document in here were not planning ahead.
Well, a lot of the fiascos that we tried to document were ones that were incredibly well-intentioned, and I think there's probably a parallel there. But the good intentions often go so badly awry that it really seemed like it merited a book. We really wanted to get at the idea of sort of failure as fun, and we did avoid sort of carnage failures. We tried to stay away from
high
body counts.
Sure.
Not funny, not entertaining. But we did try to find some that ended up having these wide cultural ripple effects that proved their importance, but were just sort of astoundingly ridiculous at the time.
Well, let's talk about a couple of them and give people a taste of what the book is about. Now, you have chapters separated for the lesson that the fiasco sort of reaps. Like read the fine print, accentuate the positive. And the one that I liked was understand the market. Now, this story, why don't you set up the story, because I think it's kind of interesting.
Well, the chapter called Understand the Market is a chronicle of the disastrous 1967 concert tour in which the Monkees were the headliners and Jimi Hendrix was the opening act.
Right.
You know, it was so astoundingly ill-conceived by the promoters that you look back on it, and it had the quintessential moment in all of these chapters where you hear about it and you just think, what were they thinking?
And what were they thinking? I mean, they were trying to sell the Monkees.
It was exactly each of them had what the other wanted. You know, this was in 1967. The Monkees were at the peak of their fame. Jimi Hendrix was just coming off the Monterey Pop Festival, where he had lit his guitar on fire and sort of scorched his name into the public consciousness. And two of the Monkees were actually at that concert, and they decided that, you know what we really need, you know, this was a group, they called them the Prefab Four, that were desperate for credibility.
Yeah.
They were put together in a studio, and, you know, they had no real musical talent.
They were a comedy group.
Exactly.
Right.
And what they wanted was respectability and credibility in the music world. And so they thought, this would be great. Let's ally ourselves with this guy who is actually an artist.
Yeah.
Who's taking it to another level.
Right.
And let's make him part of our tour. He'll be the opening act for our tour. And God bless him, Jimi Hendrix decided, What he needed was some commercial breakthrough success. I mean, the guy was at one point, not too far before this, actually suffering from malnutrition because he was so poor.
So he's thinking he can draw on the 12-year-olds that love the monkeys. He didn't ever assume that he might just frighten them with the sheer sexual energy of what he puts out there.
There was the flaw in the problem.
Yeah.
You know, they thought, okay, this is great. We'll expose Hendrix to this audience and vice versa. Except that audience was 7 to 12-year-old girls, primarily their mothers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got a guy that sort of opens for them. He did about a 25-minute set, you know, and was Jimi Hendrix. He was playing, you know, the classic cock rock guitar hero.
Mm-hmm.
And people were just running in horror. You know, the monkeys, you know, he was getting booed off stage. At one point, you know, the cry of "We want Davy" was actually drowning out Jimi Hendrix.
Oh my God! He should have set Davy on fire. That would have been hilarious.
Hey, that's entertainment.
Yeah. So this tour was a disaster for Hendrix, which couldn't have helped his head at all at that time. And I imagine that the monkeys must have been embarrassed too.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, again, they got out of it what they wanted. They, you know, the actual masterstroke of this, which saved it from being an utter fiasco, was that they, you know, Dick Clark was part of this whole operation. He was one of the promoters involved. And at one point, after about 6 shows, they realized, we got to figure out a way out of this. Hendrix is getting booed off stage. And it's just, you know, it's been a disaster. And what they came up with was actually a masterstroke of marketing genius. They decided that rather than have Hendrix get sick and pull out of the tour or something lame like that, that they would create this idea that somehow the Daughters of the American Revolution were protesting Hendrix so much that he had to leave the tour. And they planted a news story that said, you know, because of outrage from the Daughters of the American Revolution, Jimi Hendrix has decided to, you know, pull out of this tour. And it created quite a stir. And actually, Hendrix played along with it. He gave an interview to a British tabloid, sort of playing along and saying, you know, I don't get these people, but whatever. And
kind of ironic that he's in England responding to the Daughters of the American Revolution about how they didn't. That's funny.
But they sort of exited gracefully and went their own ways. And you know, it became a pivot point because in some ways they each got what they wanted. The monkeys were exposed to, you know, to sort of the art level and gained a new level of respectability just by their association with Hendrix. And Hendrix was suddenly, mostly because of the fallout publicity from the DAR,
was a hero.
Became a hero, a countercultural hero.
Yeah, and God knows the monkeys have certainly been treated well in rock history. that really garnered them that respect, and it's had a long-lasting effect on those monkeys, man. It reminds me of, it's weird because it does remind me when I was in high school, I went to, I saw, I don't know if this will have any of importance to you, but I saw AC/DC, the original AC/DC with Bon Scott, open for Journey, which is a complete mismatch. And the saddest thing about that story is I was there to see Journey. But, you know, I was younger and I didn't get to love AC/DC till later. But that's neither here nor there. Martin Smith is our guest. He's the co-author of Oops, 20 Life Lessons from Fiascos That Shaped America. Now, in the Dubious Notions Seduce Even the Brightest Mind section of the book, that's sort of a political story that I didn't really realize. I knew. Why don't you set that up for us?
This was in the early 1970s, still when America was in the grip of the Cold War. And if you'll recall, in the early 70s, we had a fairly paranoid president who got news at one point that there, you know, surfaced in the CIA film of a woman in Russia who was exercising extraordinary powers of psychic abilities. In other words, she was able to bend spoons, the whole Yuri Gilla
thing.
She was able to separate the yolk from the white of an egg at a distance of 6 feet. And you know, the rumor spread that this woman was being employed by the Soviet military intelligence and the military operation. And the, you know, the implications of this power were astounding to the CIA. And they actually created a group, a team of paranormals, put them on the government payroll, and spent the equivalent of about $100 million in today's dollars to fund this operation, where these guys would basically sit around a room and experiment with paranormal phenomena and try and bend spoons with their minds.
Who hasn't done that on a Friday night?
And the idea was that you could employ these guys to go out and, you know, psychically read documents on Nikita Khrushchev's desk and you know, find missile and submarine positions by just simply sort of viewing them. It was called remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were
trained. Is that a military term?
Yeah, remote viewing. That was actually, and they were called Detachment G. I love that.
That was the name of the type of people that could do remote viewing?
They were Detachment G. Oh. And so they put these people to work, and this program lasted for about 12 years.
That's unbelievable. Taxpayers' money going into Detachment G units who are doing remote, what was it, remote?
Remote viewing.
Remote. Boy, that's not going to, you know, I wouldn't fall for that twice. How long did that, that's unbelievable that these guys kept the racket going. Did they actually think they were getting results?
Well, can you imagine being like a nightclub magician that you know has a psychic act and suddenly realizing you can get on the government payroll for you know umpteen millions of dollars?
Yeah, just, how many magicians have a pension?
Yeah, for sitting around in a room and trying to bend a spoon with your mind.
And just saying you're reading documents like Khrushchev is planning something bad. That's all I can glean from my detached reading of this. Yeah. That's hilarious.
I sense missiles somewhere.
Well, you know, there's a show that comes on late at night on the sister network here, and the entire evening is spent talking about those things. And I don't know where you stand on that kind of stuff, but when you read stuff like that, I mean, it seems ridiculous, but who knows, right? Is it all a trick? I don't know. What do you think?
You know, you've been to the Magic Castle. You know, you've seen this stuff.
I've been to Disneyland. I mean, maybe they can't bend spoons, but I'm not a religious person. But sometimes I'd like to think that some of the stuff that we've turned off in our heads that were once needed when we were more primitive is still can, you know, do the big reading of things. What I'm saying is I know exactly what you're thinking right now, Martin. And we'll get on to the next question. I'd like to set up this one thing about Thomas Alva Edison, because I didn't know this about this footage. I had no idea about the backstory, but I have seen that footage of an elephant being electrocuted, that silent film. I saw it. It was in a history of Coney Island that I'd seen. Now, I had no idea that Thomas Alva Edison was sort of working angles to put alternate current?
Yeah.
Out of business.
Right.
And can we talk about that when we come back here?
Absolutely.
In just a second? All right, folks, so we are talking to Martin Smith. The book is Oops, 20 Life Lessons from the Fiascos That Shaped America. It is 19 past the hour. Stay with us here on The Mark Maron Show.
The Dr. Jennifer Berman Show on Saturday nights at 10 and hear the hottest doctor in Beverly Hills giving you all the sex 411 you can handle. A feminist with a liberal twist. Plus hear me, Tom Reese, crack the whip with the guy's point of view. Turn on that radio and get turned on. Saturday nights at 10. It's Dr. Jennifer Berman on LA's Progressive Talk, AM 1150.
And now, music and passion, Mark Maron.
That was a nicer intro, I think. We're talking to Martin Smith, co-author of Oops, 20 Life Lessons from the Fiascos That Shaped America. I guess I'm the only guy that doesn't know about this Thomas Edison thing, because, Jim, you knew about it.
Oh, yeah.
Brendan seemed to know about it. And it's under the chapter, Accentuate the Positive, How Thomas Edison Invented Trash Talk. Now, explain to me what the big competition was at this time.
Well, one of the things we try to do with all the chapters in Oops is sort of work from a contemporary reality and trace the dots backwards to where it all began.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we looked around and, you know, we asked the question, when did it become okay to essentially diss your competitor, whether it be in politics or whether it be in commerce and advertising? And we traced it back to this moment in the early 1900s when you mentioned the film Electrocuting an Elephant, a 1906
film, right,
by Thomas Edison. That really is the only remaining evidence or the only tangible evidence of what was called the War of the Currents. And this was the end stage of the War of the Currents. Now, what the War of the Currents was that in the beginning, there were two types of electricity. There was AC and there was DC. Now, Thomas Edison had made a lot of inventions that ran on DC electricity.
Yeah.
along comes a guy named George Westinghouse and his colleagues, and they have come up with AC electricity, which is a much better brand of electricity because it doesn't need a generating station every mile or so to keep the current flowing. It flows on its own. So you can electrify vast portions of America using AC electricity much easier. Well, you know, at that point, Edison could either wave the white flag and say, you know what, I'm going to convert all my inventions to AC electricity, or he could say, I'm going to convince people that AC electricity is really, really dangerous.
Evil.
Evil. And that's the tack that he took. And it was dangerous. You could electrocute yourself with AC electricity much more easily than you could with DC. The way he decided to demonstrate this publicly was by staging, and this is where the trash talk comes, is staging a series of very public animal electrocutions. He started small, you know, modest guy, started with dogs. You know, he would assemble a crowd of people in an auditorium and say, you know, we're here to talk about the dangers of AC electricity, and I just want to show you something. And they'd bring out this unsuspecting dog and wire it up to this table. And zap, you know, and you know, smoke would rise and smell would fill the auditorium and people would be horrified.
With no reason? There was no reason
to prove how dangerous.
But he would just kill dogs. Why wouldn't they think that that guy was an ass for killing a dog?
It did kind of backfire on him. You know?
Okay.
Leap forward about 100 years and you realize that America now runs on AC electricity. So it didn't really work. But, you know, he would not be dissuaded from the idea that trashing AC electricity was the way to go. And so he escalated, you know, over the next year or so, you know, went from dogs to, you know, lambs to, you know, sheep to cattle to horses. And eventually, you know, when he found out that there was a rogue elephant at Coney Island named Topsy that had killed its trainer. Now, the trainer had killed Topsy had fed Topsy a lit cigarette. So you could argue it was sort of justifiable homicide, but Topsy had stomped its trainer to death. And they decided that they were going to hang Topsy. Well, the ASPCA got all excited about that and decided they would not have a public hanging of an elephant for sport and entertainment. And Edison stepped up and said, you know what, I've got this swell AC electricity generator here. I'll come over and electrocute your elephant for you, which they did. Now, Thomas Edison, being the huckster that he was, took a film of it.
Because, I saw it. It's disturbing.
Because what he was doing at the time was transitioning out of electricity and electrical generation into movie making. He needed something to go out and sell the concept of movies. So he filmed the electrocution of this elephant and took it on the road.
Wow. It's unbelievable how animal sacrifice has led to the popularity of movies, and was also the birth of negative advertising.
Now, you don't want to necessarily limit it to animal sacrifice either, because one of the things Edison did in the course of this campaign, the War of the Currents, was to convince the New York State Death Commission that, you know what, electrocution would actually be a good way to execute condemned criminals, regardless of the fact that it was probably the cruelest possible way to execute condemned criminals. He convinced them that it was painless and you know, very clean and sanitary. In fact, it was, you know, roasting people alive, but he convinced them that, you know, this would be a good way to do it, especially if you use these generators,
right.
AC generators, you know, manufactured by my good friend George Westinghouse.
And mention it.
And at one point, he was actually trying to get the term Westinghouse into the public lexicon. In other words, you know, we're going to Westinghouse this criminal tomorrow.
That's unbelievable.
He was a genius.
So our guest has been here, Martin J. Smith. He is the co-author of Oops, 20 Life Lessons from the Fiascos That Shaped America. A lot of other good stories in there. Martin, I want to thank you for coming by. It's great talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to take a call from Jim's friend Heather after the break, who has a little something to say about Edison. Did you know she knows something about Edison? Stay with us. 29 past.
Now, he once electrocuted a wombat to illustrate the evils of static cling. Mark Maron.
I did do that. You're telling all my secrets. It's 35 past the hour. Hope you're still with us. Hope you're hanging out. It is the Mark Maron Show. It is AM 1150 Progressive Talk. Heather is calling from Jim's house. Let's ask. Heather, how are you, Heather?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, Mark?
It was great to spend time with you in Phoenix. I mean, oh, damn it. Anyways.
What?
Yeah. But,
I mean, I haven't seen you in quite some time.
I know, Mark. Since that time you came over for dinner.
Nice. Yeah, that was like a million years ago.
Yeah, it was nice to see you then. Anyways,
good to see you too.
Jim's here.
Hi.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Jim.
So what do you know about this Edison thing?
Well, I know that in 1893, Edison approached the guys who were putting together the World's Fair in Chicago to convince them. They were deciding to light the whole thing up, which most people had never seen before. So he went to convince them to run the whole thing in D.C. and quoted them a price of $1.8 million to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Westinghouse came in. $399,000, and that totally changed, like, the way people learned about current. And AC became the popular current because they were exposed to it at the World's Fair.
Wow.
Where, incidentally, for the dedication, a guy wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, was introduced to the country at the World's Fair as part of the dedication. So there's the politics for you.
Did you know that your significant other knew this stuff just off the top of her head, Jim?
Hell no. Man, that's impressive.
Today you said I had no mystery, but there you go.
I never said that. Don't bring this out. What are you? Don't bring that out. We're on the radio.
Bitch.
What?
Yeah. You just let me know, Jim, when you want me to end this. And I got a button right over here that can put an end to this.
I heard a great eHarmony commercial while I was on hold, so I think I'll be okay.
Oh, good. You'll be all right. So I think you have a lot of mystery, because when we were in Phoenix, I didn't think that was an issue at all.
I didn't even know that was you.
I'm pretty mysterious myself.
Huh?
It's getting weird, isn't it, Jim?
I was just reading about Edison and.
But you memorized all that, right? That was off the top of your head, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I'm reading the book right now. It wasn't like a book I read 6 months ago and could just pull it out of my butt. Like, it's very fresh in my mind.
But that's good that you have that much retention at all, because usually when I read, I feel like I'm actually thinking the things I'm reading, and then it goes away shortly after.
This is my second time to read this book because I found it fascinating the first time, and I'm enjoying it just as much the second time.
You better tell us what the name of the book is since you're selling it so hard.
I am. It's The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson, and it's all about kind of how the fair came about to beat out, you know, France had the big fair, and sort of how this fair came about and changed the shape of a country, and at the same time introduced one of the first known serial killers who was able to really operate in how seedy and terrible Chicago was in the late 1800s.
Oh, my God, you're just going to have to tell the whole story.
The story's so much more than that. The Ferris wheel was introduced at that fair.
Ferris wheel, serial killers, and Thomas Edison becoming bitter because he got screwed by Westinghouse, and the Pledge of Allegiance all in one book?
And taking it out on animals.
Wow.
All in one book.
That's
except for the animals part, which I learned on your radio program.
I'll see the give and take of learning. Thanks, Heather. Talk to
all
you
right,
soon.
Bye.
Wow, that was awkward, wasn't it, Jim?
Yeah, she's up late.
Let's take this one call. The guy's been holding on a while. Hey, Ken, what do you need, buddy?
You know, I listen to Air America several hours a day, and I listen to the Democrats whining and complaining. Mm. And the only way we're going to win is to out-rove Karl Rove. Those guys are just not afraid of us. And I just keep thinking of the scene of the horse's head from The Godfather.
Right.
And I don't know, what is it going to take to make Democrats, the Democratic establishment, understand that they've got to start playing hardball?
I agree with you. So you're saying that we need to outrove and put a horse's head in his bed?
Well, whatever it takes.
I see.
These guys get away with murder, and we're not, you know, I think the most of the American people think, it's just Republicans and Democrats, it's those people in Washington, it's just politics as usual. I mean, I'd love to see the entire Democratic congressional delegation in the House and Senate just get up and walk out and hold a press conference on the steps of the Capitol and say we're no longer going to be a party to a one-party dictatorship.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, they had the opportunity with this Feingold censure for just a few of them to step up and just at least get on board with that and at least show they had some spine, but they're so preoccupied with their own political futures that they don't have the guts to do that. And in my own head, I'm just hoping to God that Karl Rove or something something goes down with either the Fitzgerald investigation or something to discredit that guy, because I'll tell you, all Democrats just sit around assuming that he's in control of everything anyways, literally to the point where they don't think that he's beatable. They're literally saying, ah, oh, it's raining, Rove. God, we can't do anything.
Well, they need to do to him what he does to them. Everybody's forgotten about McCain in South Carolina, about Max Cleland, about all of
Boy, I wish the Democrats could find a Karl Rove. I wish we had a guy, and we've been talking about that. We've talked about that on Air America before. You know, I don't know if it's a lack of leadership, or we just aren't as evil as they are, or else our priorities aren't in the right place. But you're absolutely right. We do need somebody that is that ingenious in term and that shameless and that without conscience. Unfortunately, those are Republican qualities.
Well, you got to fight fire with fire, and the only way we're going to beat them is to get down. People don't even understand, like, on the economy. I mean,
yeah.
I think middle America doesn't understand.
Well, they're going to when they all of a sudden the middle class is now the new poor. And they'll understand it. Thanks for your call, Ken. Appreciate it. Hey, he's right. I mean, we've talked about that before, and certainly you hear it a lot on the station, is that what it takes for people, for working people, for average people, for people like my brother, for people whose lives are just full of too much busyness to really feel the impact of politics in their life, what it takes is all of a sudden they haven't got anything. All of a sudden, you know, they want to sue a corporation for some injustice, and they can't because of Republican legislation. All of a sudden, they want to file for personal bankruptcy because of a sickness in the family or a divorce or some hardship they went through, and they can't because of Republican legislation. Or all of a sudden, they lose their job because of Republican legislation. They can't get health coverage because of Republican legislation. If they can connect these dots and they are affected in the place where it hurts them the most, in their well-being financially, is when they wake up. But I think what Ken was trying to say and what Ken was trying to point out, and I think it's a good point, is that how do we educate people to realizing that that's what is causing their discomfort or their pain? That's a good point. And also he was saying we need an evil bastard to run the campaigns, and I think that's probably true too. Every week we reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance. Ooh. Oh. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm right. Pretty good.
Rosemary Clayman, pagan witch. Rosemary Clayman, a self-described witch who won the legal right to perform pagan weddings in Virginia, died this month of a heart attack, apparently while pleasuring herself with a five-pointed star and a broom.
Come on. Oh, that's horrible.
I know. Clayman first rejected Christianity in the 1970s, when it became obvious to her that a benevolent, all-seeing God never would have allowed disco.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yep. No, you all right, man?
Yeah, there's so much dust.
Might be those flowers in the corner. I don't know.
Yeah, who would bring flowers in here?
I don't know whose those are. Oi?
Oi. Clayman got a job at NASA testing spacesuits for air leaks. She also shook out moon dust from wrinkles in the suits. But friends say the most interesting NASA job was casting evil spells on two space shuttle missions.
Oh, man. She was really an evil witch.
I don't know. I'm just recounting what I read in the papers.
Is that stuff true?
Yeah.
You're right. You sound a little congested.
I don't know what it is.
You want a Kleenex?
It rains for a day, and then I just get it.
Once you blow your nose,
takes a lot.
Let's try and erase what you just said from the heads of the people that are listening.
Hey, I don't make up the news. I just report it.
I understand. Sure.
Don't shoot the messenger. Later, Clayman compiled a syllabus for a 3-year course of study on neo-pagan beliefs in response to frequent questions from friends like, why'd you strangle my cat? And, seriously, why'd you strangle my cat? Dude.
I'm laughing.
Yeah. Clayman requested her body be laid to rest near the guy who played the first Darren Stevens.
Oh, that was a good one.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Richard Kuklinski.
Was that stuff true? The NASA stuff?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, go ahead. Sorry. Richard Kuklinski.
Richard Kuklinski.
Yeah.
Mafia killer.
Yeah?
Richard Kuklinski, who claimed to have killed more than 100 people as a mafia hitman, died of shame this month when it was revealed he only killed 99. Kuklinski often listed the many ways he killed, including guns, ice picks, hand grenades, chainsaws, and crossbows. But experts agree his most effective weapon was eerie shunning.
Eerie shunning?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was fatal.
Yeah, I guess it killed that joke, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. After committing his first murder at age 14, Kuklinski said he felt, quote, empowered. Yeah. A word Oprah would later use to murder daytime television. Oh, man.
Oh, geez, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we should take those flowers out of here.
I didn't ask for them. Kuklinski later became known as the Iceman because he would often freeze corpses to disguise the time of death and then sell them as props to Martin Scorsese.
I never read about this guy.
Yeah.
I saw his TV show on him.
Yeah, two HBO specials.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I could have come up with a joke for that, but I didn't.
It's okay.
The deceased requested his remains be stuffed into the trunk of a late model domestic sedan and later be mistaken for Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
This has been this week's Weekly Remembrance.
That's it?
Until... Yeah?
Okay.
What, you want another one?
No, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. They go by so quickly.
I know. It's so engaging.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
And you're
eerily shunned, I felt.
Eerie shunning.
Eerie shunning. What is that exactly, eerie shunning?
You just, okay, if you walk down the street and you see somebody you know, and they just kind of look at you and then turn their head and walk past you.
Like you don't even exist.
Eerie shunning.
Yeah, yeah.
Till this next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
Oh, thank you, Mort. That was tremendous. The Iceman died. That guy was...
Iceman.
First rate creepy. Have you seen either of the specials?
The Iceman Leaveth. No.
Dude. He was like this pathological sociopath that was completely unashamed of what he did and spoke about it with a chilling, calculating type of confidence. Chilling, calculating, eerily shunning. We're just stringing him along. So, look, we're going to get into this Bush press conference, and we're going to get into what he said, and we're going to get into how he said it. And we're going to go into how he's lying. But more importantly, what is he doing politically? What do I think he's doing? I mean, the guy lies. You can't spend the entire day going, he's a liar. Look, I'll show you that he lies. Well, that's clear. But he's not just lying for the sake of lying. And clearly, he really doesn't give a rat's about, you know, what the country thinks of him. I mean, he certainly wasn't speaking this morning like a president who had a 33% approval rating. So hang out for that. It is 49 past the hour.
You're listening to a man who, when threatened by predators, can inflate his body to within three times its normal size, Mark Maron! And now he coined the phrase, yeah, baby. Mark Maron.
Yeah, was that me? I guess it was me. I kind of forget what I do and how I contribute to the culture. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Chris Daly. He's a blogger, and he's a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, made up an impeachment proposal that they voted on. What effect that has, other than rippling through the press, we'll talk to him about. I also want to talk to him about... some California voters and activist groups who sued the state's top election official in an effort to reverse the certification of certain electronic voting machines made by Diebold. Get into that with him. But right now, look, the fake Christian blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, George W. Bush, this morning in a White House press conference, has basically informed the country that he's going to keep the troops in Iraq for a while.
There come a day, and I'm not asking you when, I'm not asking for a timetable, will there come a day when there will be no more American forces in Iraq?
That, of course, is an objective, and that'll be decided by future presidents and future governments of Iraq.
Wow. future presidents and future governments of Iraq. Future presidents. Now, what I get out of that is that he's saying he's going to keep them there till after 2008. Is that what he's saying? I mean, that to me, that is amazing. So he's going to pass the buck two years down the line and leave our troops there. What is he gambling? What is he gambling on? I can't believe with a 33% approval rating, this president is saying that he's going to leave troops in Iraq until past 2008. I just don't understand where he gets nads that big to say that. Is he banking on the idea that maybe if the war just continues that the next president, the next Republican, can run on the fact that, like, hey, you don't want to change parties when there's an eternal war being fought? It's mind-blowing. And then he says, now, one thing that has been documented more than anything else is that this administration, Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearl, Cheney, all of them, did not expect what happened, did not have a plan going in, did not have a plan for rebuilding, and certainly don't have a plan now, yet Bush says this today.
Secondly, I'm confident, or I believe, I'm optimistic, we'll succeed. If not, I'd pull our troops out.
There's no indication. There is no indication. I mean, this is crap. He has no plan. There hasn't been a plan. And the bottom line is that he and his cronies have made billions of dollars off the death of 2,300 Americans and the maiming of thousands more and the killing of hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians. This is the way corporate think works. This guy has got nothing to lose anymore, and he's using other people's money. So he'll just let it go on and on until something turns or until something levels off and that he can take responsibility for it, even if he's not in office at that time. I really believe this is his game, that he's willing to gamble that the future will look at him as someone who instigated this insane, stupid war, but it was necessary because things did level out and he will glean credit from that. That's what he's gambling on. I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think he's got anywhere else to go. And bottom line is, there are still people who are personal friends of his and his family who are making a fortune off of this thing. And the other thing that the president in 2008, whoever's going to have to make a decision about how long troops are going to stay there, are going to also have to make a decision about how to handle the fact that the country is broke. I mean, with the debt right now and the deficit right now, and they've upped the ante on how much it's going to cost to execute this horrendous war, it went up 44% from $6.8 billion to $9.8 billion a month. These guys are going to leave somebody holding the bag. Whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, this country is going to be screwed for decades to come because of this administration. And there's no doubt about that in my mind. We'll be talking about Chris. We're going to be talking to Chris Daley, San Francisco Board of Supervisors, radical thinker, progressive, in just a few minutes. It's coming up on top of the hour.
And now he's flipped over on the 210 in Azusa. Mark Maron.
Oh, was that me? Glad I made it. 6 past the hour, you're listening to AM 1150, Progressive Talk. This is the Mark Maron Show. That is little Jimmy Earle. Huh?
Hi.
Hey. We are talking about the president. We're doing many things. Are we doing another version of these? Is that the plan? Are we going to do this? Yeah? Maybe not. We are going to talk to Chris Daley in just a few minutes. He's from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. But before I do that, I was talking before the break. I was talking about George Bush's press conference this morning. And there was a moment where, if you're just tuning in, he basically said that troops will be in Iraq until another president deals with it. And then there was a moment that he had with Helen Thomas, who, of course, has been reporting on the White House for God knows how long, over 30 years, 40 years. And she rarely gets treated very well by McClellan or by Bush, certainly with very little respect. They talk down to her. They treat her like a feeble person. And she's very bright. She's very sharp and asks very pointed questions. And she got a question in today, and George Bush's response to it was baffling to me, given what I have in my hand right now. Can we hear that?
Helen, after that brilliant performance at the gridiron, I am...
I'm going to be sorry.
Okay. Well, then let me take it back.
I'd like to ask you, Mr. President,
Your decision to invade Iraq has caused the death of thousands of Americans and Iraqis. Wounds of Americans and Iraqis for a lifetime. Every reason given, publicly at least, has turned out not to be true. My question is, why did you really want to go to war?
Mm-hmm.
From the moment you stepped into the White House,
yeah.
From your cabinet, form of cabinet officers, intelligent people, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What was your real reason? You have said it wasn't oil, quest for oil. It hasn't been Israel or anything else. What was it?
Yeah, I think your premise, and all due respect to your question and to you as a lifelong journalist, is that, you know, I didn't want war. To assume I wanted war is just flat wrong, Helen, in all due respect. No, hold on for a second, please. Excuse me. No president wants war. Everything you may have heard is that, but it's just simply not true.
See, I think that all he wanted was war. Let's just, I've got proof of that in my hand. Let me just hear that one more time. The last one, just the end of what he said. You don't have it there? All right. Well, he basically said is, I don't want war. Now, here's the deal, is that this is from, do you know who Mickey Herskovitz is? This is a guy that wrote, he ghost wrote A Charge to Keep, My Journey to the White House. He talked with Bush on numerous occasions, okay? There is a quote that I have in front of me from George Bush that says this. One of the keys to being seen, this is a quote from George W. Bush, quote, one of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as a commander in chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed and I'm going to have a successful presidency, end quote. That was in 1999. And he was talking about it, and this is what he said at the end of his answer to Helen Thomas.
To assume I wanted war is just flat wrong, Helen.
That's all he ever wanted. And this goes back to 1999. This was the design from 1999. And, you know, people are constantly saying, was it about oil? Was it about Halliburton? Was it about making money? You know what? Sometimes... Yeah, all those things can fall into place, but sometimes you might want to just look at something like this, as simple as this. Who cares what it was about to this guy? All he wanted to do was be a frightening, successful leader, and I think he's still running on that. I think he still believes that the coming midterms can not only be won on moral issues and exploiting the Democrats' proposals for censure and impeachment, which they're going to twist. I mean, Feingold makes his proposal. He gets support from two or three Democratic senators, and these guys are going to blow it out of proportion during the midterms. But I think he really thinks that Americans are going to continue to believe that you can't criticize or hold a president responsible during wartime because he's a commander in chief. This is a guy with a 33% approval rating. He's got some nads, this guy, to even make these assumptions. He's operating in a separate reality. And I think that he might be set up to be doing that as well. He's probably being encouraged to be conscienceless and steadfast in the face of reality so Republicans can distance themselves from him during the midterms. Literally, I bet you'll see Republicans campaigning saying, hey, I ain't that far out. I've got some disagreements with this president. They're going to use him like that. That's how shameless these guys are, is that they'll tell Bush to go ahead and present himself like that so he can be used as a negative influence. They don't care. They just want to maintain power. And I think that to think that Americans are going to put up with this crap in the face of a civil war where American soldiers are fodder and being shot at in a situation that is relatively and completely unwinnable with our presence there. He's just underestimating the public. He's underestimating the public in the face of 2,300 deaths of Americans. He's underestimating the public in the face of a 44% rise in the cost of this war to $9 billion, $9.8 billion a month from $6.8 billion a month. He's underestimating the American public to know that $337 billion has been spent on Iraq and Afghanistan since 9/11. And I guess that in the same way, as I said before, in the same way that another president in 2008 is going to, you know, decide whether or not American troops should be pulled out of this eternal war, they're going to have to deal with the complete collapse of the American economy. These guys are so stubborn, so selfish, and so completely greedy. It's really that I've dealt with this on a smaller level. It's that sort of follow that sucker disposition, you know, that sort of like we're going to do whatever the hell we want. We're going to take whatever the hell we want. And no one can stop us. And if you're next, good luck, pal. Good luck. Follow that. All right. Let's see what this is. Sanchez in L.A., what's going on?
Hey, man. You know the story of the little Dutch boy that has to have his hand in the dike. Meanwhile, there's these ever-growing leaks and cracks.
Yeah, I kind of do. You want to refresh my memory?
Well, it's, you know, he's trying to save the dike. It's about to leak. And then, like, the fable goes that he sticks his hands in, and he's trying to summon for help, but there's nobody around. And meanwhile, these leaks and cracks are going. The way things are going right now in the administration, I mean, you and I know what we're talking about here.
Okay.
So the bottom line is that he's looking more and more like that at the press conference. You notice that he didn't answer Helen Thomas's question.
He completely avoided it.
Yeah, and that speaks volumes on its own. And what was up about that half-hearted regret at the end? You know what, when he was walking off stage there and he admitted, okay, well, I half regret what's going on concerning the Iraq war. What was up with that, man?
I have no idea where that guy's coming from. It's like you're saying that it is hard for me to tell whether he's acting on his own impulses or he's being told to act a certain way. But it clearly, he operates at a level of confusion sometimes that I don't understand.
I know. And this is no laughing matter, but do you think this could be construed to be some kind of stand-up routine? Because it was tragically hilarious, man.
Well, you know, he got a joke in with Helen. He loves to disarm people like that. But, I refuse to acknowledge his foibles as being, you know, anything entertaining or endearing. I just refuse to, because I think that it's a trick that guy plays, and it stops people from taking him to task.
Yeah, man, well, I know. I hear where you're coming from, and I fully understand that. But at some points, I was laughing because it was so tragically hilarious.
Well, as long as you were, having the evil satisfaction of watching a guy fail, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, man.
Bye. So, I don't want this guy to be a sympathetic character in any way. I just don't want, you know, I'm fighting it. Maybe it's my own sort of denial, my own revisionism, because I know he has that quality. I just refuse to acknowledge it anymore, given the state of things.
I think he's acting on his belief in the rapture and those around him, the neocons around him.
I've heard that too. You know, someone blogged that, but I don't believe that. I don't believe that he's a real Christian of that ilk, and I don't believe a lot of those guys either. I believe that they're greedy bastards who have sold out Christianity to maintain power. I think that's crap. I think they really don't care. And it's not because they think Jesus is coming back. Well, I don't buy it.
Well, I believe that people who believe in the rapture really don't care.
That's one way to look at that. Yeah. Sure, because what the hell? Why not?
Yeah.
But I think he's a fraud. I think he's a fraud. I don't think he is an evangelical Christian. I think he's a stubborn, rich bastard that thinks he'll always be taken care of. I don't think that Cheney's a religious man. I don't think that Rumsfeld's a religious man.
Well, he's leaving his mess for other presidents to clean up. That's what he's doing now.
Right. Yeah. But I think he knows that. And I think that's the gamble they're willing to take, because Cheney, maybe he said that, Reagan proved that deficits don't matter because you don't have to care about the next generation of people. And given Republican policy, maybe enough poor people will die because they don't have voices anyways. And the middle class will maintain their somnambulistic existence to the point where they don't act on these issues. But there is somebody that is acting on issues. Like, I defended Russ Feingold's call for a censure of the president, and our guest is part of a group of lawmakers that are going even further. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors passed a resolution to impeach Bush, which begs the question, why? Will it make a difference, or is it just an act of protest or dissent? Chris Daly is a San Francisco City Supervisor. Good evening, Chris. How are you?
I'm good tonight. How are you doing?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for being on the show, and thanks for having some guts up there in SF. I love that city.
Not a problem. You know, it's not even really guts up here. It's kind of the mainstream.
that's good. I hope it inspires the rest of the country. Now, San Francisco isn't the only city.
Well, apparently it has been since our our resolution passed here, a whole bunch of Vermont towns went. There's several cities now in California, North Carolina, all over the country.
Now, let me ask you a question, Chris. If enough cities mobilize in this direction and these state boards pass these resolutions, outside of a cultural impact, I mean, which I think is important, does it have a political impact in terms of the legislation itself?
Well, I mean, the actual legislation is symbolic, but, you know, basically it was anti-war groups. It was actually the local Democratic Party and other grassroots organizations that brought it to me. And, you know, I didn't want to do the thing just for the sake of it, but it seemed to make sense in terms of building some momentum, maybe one day building a movement towards some justice in this country. And clearly with the Republicans in control of the House and the Senate, I mean, we're not really looking at an impeachment resolution this term. With that said, I think that the Democratic leadership, of which, you know, my Congress member is Nancy Pelosi, who's the minority leader, they could use a little more backbone. And
I think you're right. And if it has to happen at a city level or a state level, which seems to be happening more and more.
Yeah, so when the grassroots are bubbling up and when the locally electeds are saying, yeah, let's push these guys, then
you know,
Nancy Pelosi needs to take note and the other Democrats need
to take note.
Chris. You know, and I think we're seeing some movement now in D.C.
Hang on with us. We're talking to Chris Daley, San Francisco Board of Supervisors, activist. We're going to keep talking to him. It's 20 past. Stay with us.
Now back to a close personal friend of Don Budge, Mark Maron.
Don Budge. How do I know that name? Don Budge.
A tennis great from the 30s.
Oh, that's right. No.
You ought to know that, right?
Yeah,
right?
It's at the tip of my tongue.
Everybody knows that.
On the phone, San Francisco City Supervisor Chris Daley is with us. They passed a resolution up in San Francisco, the Board of Supervisors, passed 7-3. To impeach the president. This is something that's going on in many states. States and cities are taking political action to instigate their representatives to find some guts. So now, Chris, are you aware, I'm sure you are, of the lawsuit against Diebold that's attempting to reverse the certification of the electronic voting machines up there?
Voting machines, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Oh, man. I mean, good news is that we moved to instant runoff up here in the city, which means, you know, we used to have a general election, and then if no one got 50%, we'd go to a runoff. The good news is we have a more inclusive voting system now where you can rank candidates, and then there's a calculation, and then, you know, there's a winner declared on the same night. You know, the bad news is that this has gotten mixed up in, you know, the whole voting machine controversy, and, you know, we're struggling with vendors who have the technology, who have, you know, the sign off from the Secretary of State, you know, and I'm not the main person on it, but we have, I think, an item up next week in front of us. You know, it's a mess.
It's a mess in terms of
the entire state.
The bottom line is that the people that are drawing the suit are against these paperless machines that can be tampered with, right?
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, well, okay. Well, I'm glad it makes sense. Now, let's talk about some of the other stuff you're doing up there. You know, Jim and I, my partner here, I lived in San Francisco for a few years, and so did Jim as well. And, you know, we certainly love that city. And it seems to me that, you know, you're taking some real action around a lot of different issues that are pretty provocative and progressive issues. Whatever happened with the fight against closing down the legal cannabis dispensaries?
Well, I mean, you know, we're a city again, just like the rest of the state, you know, voted overwhelmingly, which was 215 to say that the state should legalize marijuana for medicinal purposes. Here in the city, what we've done lately is we've attempted to enact regulations. It was actually the medical marijuana committee that came forward and said they wanted regulations in order to move, you know, the whole industry and the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes more into the mainstream. So we've actually enacted regulations. You would think that, you know, we wouldn't want to regulate them in terms of being pro-medical marijuana, but actually it's a bit counterintuitive. We've moved forward with regulations. I think there's about 30 some odd medical marijuana clubs in the city, and, you know, we're trying to permit them.
So you've enacted regulations in order to give them permits to operate legally without being busted.
That's the idea. You know, still the DEA walks in and busts clubs whenever they want. And right after we passed that legislation, it was a couple of months ago, the DEA came in and they busted one of the most upstanding of the clubs, I think, to try and say that they're still, you know, they're still, you know, they're still the boss.
Now,
but
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Now, you have a fairly antagonistic relationship with San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom. Is that is it prime? What is that about? Because is that a class thing? What is your primary problem with him?
You know, I mean, I represent the Central City. You know, I have the most low-income folks. And, you know, the mayor is progressive on social issues. Of course, we all applaud at Newsom and his stance on gay marriage. And, you know, he's done some other good things, like he's walked the picket line with the hotel employees. But, you know, when you get to the bread and butter issues, you know, he still kowtows to the big power brokers, the Don Fishers, you know, who's the founder of Gap, who's a big Republican, you know, financier. He still kowtows.
He kowtows to the money in the city.
Yeah, when it comes to the bread and butter issues, absolutely.
All right, now I want to talk to you. Now you've had some run-ins with Bill O'Reilly. You've been on his show.
I've actually never been on Bill O'Reilly's show. I've turned him down every time he's asked me.
All right.
I've spent some time on MSNBC, but I try not to go on Fox.
Well, hang out for one more break, can you? And we can get into that. Is that all right?
That's good. Yeah.
All right, we're talking to Chris Daly. He is a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He is a supervisor for the city. That city has passed a resolution to impeach the president, which I think culturally it has instigated other cities to do the same, and also has I don't know. It's provocative stuff, and if the Democrats aren't going to stand up for it, then the city's got to do it and to push them to do it. So we'll talk to him about Bill O'Reilly in a second. It's 29 past.
And now he's overflowing with the charm of old Mexico, Mark Maron.
Oh, boy. It's getting late, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Getting punchy, are you?
It sure is.
We're on the phone with Chris Daly. He's a San Francisco city supervisor, and he and some other city supervisors up there voted in a resolution to impeach the president. And the important issue here is that this stuff is happening on state levels. It's happening on city levels to elevate political conscience in those cities, in those states, and to fight the power of a completely Republican-controlled government, and I appreciate you doing that. Hey, so you've never been on Bill O'Reilly's show?
No. He invited me on, but I've declined him. I said I'd debate him anytime, anywhere in a fair debate, but that does not include being on the show.
Because you think he'd just steamroll you?
Well, you talk over you and then shut off your microphone, so I don't see how that's a fair debate.
Yeah, who the hell wants that? But you have you been on MSNBC talking about Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah, I haven't shied away from conservative. I went on Tucker. And I went on Scarborough. Scarborough was kind of a jerk, but Tucker wasn't too bad.
I think Tucker's kind of a douchebag, man. I can't stand his haircut. I don't like his dumb bow tie, and I don't think he knows who he is. I don't even think he knows what the hell he's trying to do on that show.
I don't think so either. But he wanted to finish my sentences, so that was good.
Yeah, and then he kind of tries to smugly condescend without bringing the real goods, and
He did try and do that, but it didn't really work.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't really work. I just think it's a matter of time before he just, you know, comes on his show and cries in the middle of it, and it's over for him. So now, do you have plans? I mean, do you have a political future in mind, Chris?
I assume I have no political future. I'm actually going to run for reelection. I've done that before, and it shouldn't be too big of a deal. But, you know, I like being close to the constituents. Being a district supervisor in San Francisco, my district's only about 70,000 people. So.
Who's in it? Maybe I lived in it. Which part?
I represent the south of Market, Tenderloin, North Mission.
Tenderloin, I never lived there, but I've walked through there and said, like, wow, look at that guy.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a tough neighborhood, but it's, you know, it's got a lot of positive things going for it, too.
Oh, no, I think it's an amazing neighborhood. We were just up there. I was just up there with my producer, Brendan. I was working at the Punchline up there. And because the Tenderloin is so intense and it's such a small area, I've always found that the people that are whacked out there put a lot more effort into it because they have to stand out more than in a bigger city. Did you ever find that?
You know, I've got the best of the worst, I guess.
No. It's a great city. So you got that whole Polk Street thing. That's pretty pretty hairy down there. I lived up in the Haight myself. Where'd you live, Jim?
I lived in Clement in Richmond and in Noe Valley.
Well, look, Chris.
Liberal districts.
Yeah. I love that city. Do you know my friend Jack Boulware? He's a writer. Do you know Jack Boulware?
No.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to introduce you guys. When I come up, we're all going to hang out. Is that all right?
That'd be cool.
All right.
Is Brendan O'Smarty still in the force?
I voted for him for city attorney at one point in my life because I thought we should put a real puppet into the city attorney's office. But our city attorney now is actually pretty decent. So.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, Chris. Take care of yourself.
Not a problem. Have a good night.
All right, you too. That's right. That guy, the cop with the puppet.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a ventriloquist dummy.
Let's do this now. We here at the Mark Maron Show, and then we're going to talk about Mexico, because I'd love to get into that with you. That was kind of funny on the break there. We got to start putting the breaks up on the premium side. But maybe we should start with just the regular shows getting up there on a regular basis. That would be Air America Radio would be the ones in charge of that. We here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society, so every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Usually our Dick of the Day comes from the civilian world, but today I've had no choice but to amplify the dickiness of a known GOP dick commodity. We all know her as the person who stepped in and shut down the recount process of the Florida votes in the rigged 2000 election. She was Jeb Bush's bitch, the great Repugupus. Repugupus. You like that? It's a hybrid. Repugupus. Catherine Harris. For being a made woman from her role as a primary shooter in the assassination of elective democracy, she feels entitled to and owed a future in GOP politics. She is running for senator of Florida. Too bad no one likes her. Even her campaign advisors have quit because she has the stink of hell on her, my friends. In order to get that stink off, she has started bandying about her belief in God. Last week, in front of 800 conservative Christians who were attending an annual Christo-fascist zombie brigade conference called Reclaiming America for Christ, Catherine Harris stood there with a straight face and said that anything is possible with God and that God wants her in public service. She referred to the movie The Last of the Mohicans with reverence because in it, people were willing to die for something bigger than themselves. Maybe it means she will actually die soon. One can dream, can't they? What a great sacrifice that would be for the betterment of the world. Congratulations, Catherine Harris, for being a desperate, unpopular, utterly corrupt political hack crony ogress willing to do anything to get into power, including exploiting Christ, which makes you a near-perfect Republican. And more importantly, it makes you the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Ow, my face! I couldn't help but do that. Man, I hate her. You think I can get any traction with Repugibus?
I like it.
Thanks, man. I think I was trying to impress you, man. I was throwing around the words a little bit. You know what I mean? Because you throw around the words sometimes in your bits. A lot of words going
down.
Yeah,
you know, words.
I used to do the word thing. I was big on words.
Words are real...
They have a lot of power in words.
Important.
They can change things. Like if I said, hey, dummy, you'd be like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why are you calling me that? See how the power
works? Not
really.
That's what you always call me.
I never call you dummy. I never do. We were talking. You want to talk about Mexico, or you want to move on?
Yeah, Mexico's great.
Yeah, but we're just. Brendan comes in and says he can still get a pretty cheap trip to Mexico. I've been there. I had a nice time, but I felt I got nauseous. I'm not going to blame the country. Yeah. But I felt 2 or 3 days in, we had a lovely time.
It's a beautiful country. Yeah. I would encourage everyone to go there that can and to patronize those up and coming resort areas. They really, the communities thrive on the
holy
on the
crap
dollars.
Is somebody paying you from the Mexico Tourism Bureau?
I fell in love with the place while I was there. I really loved it.
You've never been anywhere else.
A commercial for Mexico.
The only place you've been is like New Jersey and
Mexico. That's true.
That's not true.
I've been to so many
places in Central America and Latin America.
Oh, that's right. He was doing the big work down there.
The work?
What were you doing?
Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, I thought you were moving those sweaters up from Guatemala.
Yes.
They sold on the street.
More than sweaters, they moved down there.
Yeah, they did a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, somewhere in Central America, there are a lot of crappily built houses.
Yeah, with my handprint shoved right in the cement.
Did you do that?
I was here. No.
Did you put Brendan in?
No. You make those things with bricks, you know, not you know, malleable.
That's good, man, that you did that work. I went to Mexico. I was where you – well, I went to Huatulco and Oaxaca.
But we should address the fact that Jim thinks he can't go there because he's afraid he's going to get kidnapped.
I had the same thing. I was afraid to go down there because I just think, like, you know, what if I'm kidnapped or the cops bust me? I have money to get – just all the weird stereotypes, which I choose to believe as opposed to the ones that the Peckinpah movies have, which is like, if we can just make it to the border, we can live a life of freedom and eat coconuts and have a beach house. You know, no matter how bad we've been here.
That never happens, even in the Peckinpah movies. They make it to the border and something bad happens.
They get all shot up.
They get kidnapped.
They get shot up.
Then they got to pay
somebody.
It's a
big mess.
I think that movie, that Tommy Lee Jones movie that we saw, the three burials, we can't finish the rest of the title.
Mercurado.
Melquiades
Estrada.
That was a very accurate depiction of Mexico, not only Mexico as a land, but the culture and the...
As an idea, as a poetic symbol.
Yeah. It was. I kind of got really... nostalgic for being there
because
watching that movie.
Because of that movie, Brendan, I made my wife watch Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, which I own on DVD because it's one of the greatest movies ever. That it doesn't end as well. That doesn't make you go, I want to go to Mexico. But when he's talking to that head with that head in a bag with flies buzzing around it, oh, you got it good, don't you? Yeah, it's
never
genius.
Seen that movie, but that's the funniest title.
How can you not see Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia?
Never seen. I've used it in a million
jokes.
It's
a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
So is Ice Pirates, but I don't watch it every week.
You're a dummy.
Why do you think you're going to get kidnapped there, Jim?
Because I'm, you know, I don't know. I've always been a target, you know.
I
look like I've got 20,000. Like my parents have 20,000 bucks. They could just, you know, like telegram to Oaxaca or whatever.
That's interesting. For a guy that has more contempt than anyone I know for people with money, that he secretly thinks that other people see him as one of them. That's weird.
That's ironic.
It's kind of twisted.
Well, your brother, he spent a lot of time in Mexico. He was a car racer. He never got kidnapped.
No, but he'd have to bribe everybody.
That is true.
From one place
to
another.
Mexico City is a lot of
bribery
going.
I cannot bribe well.
I
do not bribe.
I had to bribe anybody.
Well, why don't you go to the prettier places where, you know, to the fenced-in habitats for frightened Americans? They have them all over.
No, Mark, I'm telling you, it's not like that anymore. The culture, local communities have really embraced those areas, and they don't fence them in, like in Puerto Vallarta, it's not a fenced-in area. You know, it's sequestered and closed.
No, but they have them for people like Jim. They have these weekends where you can go into these sort of like, they're like attractive concentration camps where people wait on you. Yeah, so you don't have to be frightened of the indigenous people, you weird racist freak.
There are no, you know, the Indians don't live there anymore.
Yes, they do. Are you kidding?
They've been killed off by the Mexican police.
That's not true. I had to drive because my wife decided that she knew when the plane left, the one plane that goes from Huatulco to Oaxaca.
You're making up these names now.
No,
those aren't real places.
They are. She thought she knew when the plane left.
You went from El Placo to El Tano.
Exactly. But you're okay. Fine. Now,
it's a great city.
You've crossed the line.
In Los Angeles. There's no one in this community that's going to take any offense to that.
Yeah. If there's any Latino listeners who are taking offense,
my
to
name
Jim,
is Santiago.
Who from Jim's frightened attitude about Mexico and the. But what I'm telling you is I had to drive from Huatulco to Oaxaca on this one road, and you're mistaken about people who live in the mountains and indigenous people. There are still lots of people who are indigenous people living in Mexico. And you can go to the markets and enjoy their foods if you're not afraid.
That's great.
That's the one thing that frightened me was we're staying at a bed and breakfast. Dig this. This is what pissed me off about Mexico. We're staying at a bed and breakfast, you know, which means that you have to get inappropriately involved with the people that own the place. That's bed and breakfasts are creepy because you're like, isn't this cute? And then you wake up and they're like, hi. And you're like, oh, no. Why do we have to? We moved down here 10 years ago because we didn't like America anymore. Great. Can I have some juice? But the other one we went to in Oaxaca was a Mexican couple owned it. And the woman literally said, I have to go shopping. Do you want to go to the market with me? This huge market. And she charged us $20 as a tour. She's like, you want to go shopping? She charged. But that wasn't the weird thing, is that they had the big bubbling pots of goat meat and stuff like that. And I was so paralyzed with fear of getting a parasite that I wasn't able to enjoy. But you said you ate the stuff right out of the pot there, didn't you?
I did, but I kind of stayed clear of the meats. I ate a lot of, at those markets, I ate a lot of beans and rice and stuff that was, you know, being clearly being cooked in front of me and didn't have a fear of it being undercooked. You know,
but this woman made it sound like just on these people's hands. And this was a racist, classist thing because she was a Spanish-Mexican, and she was talking about these indigenous people who were the primary sellers at the market that, like, you don't even want to – if you buy fruit from them, they have bacteria on their hands because they don't have proper sanitation.
That just sounds like xenophobia. I don't believe it to be true.
Well, I know, and I fell for it, and I didn't get to indulge in the weird goat brew.
You did eat the grasshoppers, though.
Of course I ate
Oaxaca,
the grasshoppers.
Gourmet.
You got to eat fried grasshoppers. And I ate the corn blossom soup or whatever. The squash blossom soup.
That is good.
Awesome. And plenty of mole. Wow. Man, I'm glad we covered this important stuff. No one can't tell us that we don't talk about issues on this program. We just had a conversation that revolved around visiting a country that has a lot to offer, and we helped you overcome a little bit about how you are seen by other people, you think you're seen, and also a weird inner judgment you have of Latino people, which is...
No, that's not true at all.
I misinterpret it?
I live in Angelino Heights.
Right. You're making that name up.
No, Angelino Heights is the first suburb of Los Angeles.
Yeah. All right. So what do you want, a medal?
Yes, I would like a medal.
Pulitzer Prize?
I want a medal. Yeah, give me a medal.
Why don't you stop condescending to the Latino community?
I am not condescending. I am Santiago.
Juan. You're Juan.
I'm Santiago. No, Santiago.
We're going to come back and do the short order news. Hold that thought because I know it's important. All right, it's 50 past the hour.
Stay where you are because I'm looking at you through the bathroom window. Oh, and Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
Now he refuses to let muscle pain slow him down. Mark Maron.
That's kind of true, man.
I know that about you.
It's horrendous. You get older, and like I ran today, I went 5 miles. And my wife's like, you're just going to have to give up on this thing.
You ran 5 miles today?
Yeah. She's like, you're just going to have to let it be. You're going to have to let it go. There's still some part of me that thinks I'm going to be in perfect shape, which is ridiculous and my mother's fault. I wanted to say to the people on the blog that asked the question, I think it was Shawnee Shans, who's probably asleep or not. Guy doesn't get much sleep. He's a truck driver. I have no idea who started that MySpace profile of me. I don't think it was done with anything but kindheartedness, but I did shut it down. And I will create a MySpace page for myself and the show in the next couple of days. It gives me the willies when somebody's writing as me. It happened on Friendster once too, and I got very upset with that. And I know it's all well intentioned, but it just gives me the willies a little bit. So I will get on that. Also, tomorrow, the next day, hopefully Lori David will come on and we'll settle this, you know, leaving the cell phone charger plugged in, and we'll settle this problem between Jim and her if she wants to. Jim feels a little put off, and I think she was put off, and it got a little crazy, and we want to solve that. And we want to get to the bottom of it. So, Lori, if you're listening, which you're probably not, but maybe one of your friends is, and they'll call you and go, but Lori, they were talking about you again. You can come on. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. Ved? Before you go to bed? So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. President Bush held his second news conference of the year with reporters today expressing optimism about the war in Iraq. In fact, the president felt so optimistic, even said he was going to try selling his Social Security plan to the Iraqis. Rumors are flying that Thomas Kane Jr., a Republican running for U.S. Senate, didn't arrive promptly to his own fundraiser in New Jersey last night so he could avoid being photographed with Vice President Dick Cheney. Kane said the snub was not deliberate. However, after lengthy questioning and some cocoa, Kane pointed to the crotch of a Raggedy Andy doll and said, "That's where he touched me. Are you happy now?" A new study shows that elderly women who watch daytime TV talk shows and soap operas score poorly on tests of memory. Researchers attributed the poor memory to brain trauma because most of the women end up slapping their foreheads and saying, "Why am I watching this crap?
Man,
why am I watching this crap?"
I love that joke.
And that's Mark Maron's short order news for tonight. We can't judge by the response of the women. These people here have been instructed not to laugh. All right, tomorrow, I'm planning on being alive We've got Lawton Smalls. We've got Poetry Corner with we'll get rhymes from Beat Daddy Jim Earl. How's that grab you? And maybe Lori David will be here. What do you think about that? All right?
All right. Okay.
Night, sheeple. Should have.